Palm Springs, including move out of Palm Springs. But, you know, or in North Dakota, where, I mean, what do you suggest about that?
Well, North Dakota, I can take the easy one first. Mm-hmm. North Dakota, yeah, that's right. You can't get, you know, avocados and bananas and things like that. But one of the things that I do a lot of speaking around the country, and I do little visioning sessions.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Harley Carnes. The post-Christmas shopping frenzy may help make the difference in the retail season. Scott Krugman at the National Retail Federation.
The National Retail Federation is forecasting roughly 4% growth. That's for the entire months of November and December. And we think when all the receipts are tallied, we'll probably hit that number.
With grand deals to be found all over today.
We won't quit. No, we will not quit. Because there might be another buy just around the corner.
The well-oiled money machine that Walmart is, one part of that system seems to have a glitch. Gift cards weren't registering today.
It was just aggravating standing in line so long and all and getting up there and finding out that I couldn't use the gift card that my friend had got me.
Leonard Paul's a customer in Dearborn Heights, Michigan. Walmart says it doesn't know yet how extensive the computer problem may or may not be, though CBS News has confirmed problems encountered by customers in Florida, California, Michigan, and Vermont, at least. On Wall Street, the Dow gained more than 2 points. NASDAQ was up almost 11 points on the day. Oil prices, $95.97 a barrel, up $1.84. Detectives east of Seattle in Carnation, Washington, are investigating the murders of 6 people on a property at the end of a lonely country road.
They have told us and they've told the neighbors that they don't believe there's any concern for anybody else's safety, which would suggest that they think that this was specifically targeted to the people who were killed here.
KIRO-TV's Rick Price. At the same time, detectives say murder-suicide has been ruled out, which indicates they are hunting a suspect. The San Francisco Zoo has a major mystery on its hands. How did the Siberian tiger get out of its enclosure to kill a 17-year-old boy from San Jose and to maul 2 other young people? CBS's Manuel Gallegos.
They still don't know how this tiger may have been able to get out of its enclosed area. So the San Francisco police chief says that she basically considers this area a crime scene because they don't know if there was any human involvement. So they're looking at it as a criminal case.
On the campaign trail in Iowa, Democratic leaders maneuver for position and to handle diminished expectations.
They, of course, will tell you that they feel good about the chances, but at the same time, several high-level Clinton advisors are saying that, look, they can survive not finishing first here. One even told me today they could survive a third-place finish here.
CBS's Jim Axelrod is in Pella, Iowa. Republican Mitt Romney is in New Hampshire today, where he's working to maintain the lead in the polls there.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
How are you doing today?
Good. You?
They skiing today?
In Iowa, where the caucuses are a week and a day away, of course, Mike Huckabee has surged into the lead, hunting for votes, and today, hunting pheasant. He got one, too.
Governor's bird. Yes.
He's been hunting since he was a kid. He joked he didn't invite Vice President Cheney on the trip because he wants to survive all the way to the White House. This is CBS News.
So far this year, OnStar made over 15,000 calls to check on customers involved in collisions.
OnStar emergency. I have you located on Interstate 76 westbound. Are there any injuries?
Well, I'm not real sure yet. I think a wheel flew off a car ahead of me and hit me. I'm by myself.
I will contact the 911 center.
Dispatch.
I have a car crash with airbag deployment. I'm going to go ahead and put you through.
Sir, what happened?
Something smashed into the front of my car. It was raining and it started. All I saw was this big thing coming at me, and I do see the wheel. It's a wheel and tire.
Okay, hang tight, sir. We're sending help now.
If your vehicle is in a crash, it can send OnStar an alert, along with crash details, so emergency responders send the right help.
Would you like me to remain on the line with you?
No, that's fine. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Contacting you if you've been in a crash is just one of 9 OnStar services standard with the first year of your OnStar-equipped vehicle. Visit OnStar.com to find out which one is right for you.
This is a big take-it-back-to-the-store day, of course.
Not all shoppers returning gifts are unhappy with the fit or the color. Some just want to wheel and deal, and that means saving money.
I brought my receipt back and got more money off than when I bought it 2 days ago.
While this shopper figures patience is a virtue, and besides, first things first.
No, I'm going to wait a couple of days for that. It'll be easier. Too many lines and stuff like that. I want to catch the sales first.
Stephen Kaufman, CBS News, Spokane Valley, Washington.
Actress Lindsay Lohan says those stories you heard, they weren't true. She had not been drinking or taking any kind of drug, she says, before she banged her Mercedes into a van, whose injured driver is suing now. She's produced affidavits from both the waiter at the restaurant, who says she ordered no drinks, and the off-duty cop doing moonlight security, who said he saw Lohan consume no alcohol that night. And she's countersuing the van driver based on the CHIPS accident report that said he made the illegal U-turn right in front of her. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Former Hershey syrup users are telling us why they switched to Rich Chocolate Ovaltine.
I was looking for something more nutritious for the kids because they drink a lot of chocolate milk. I never really thought about Ovaltine until we went to my mother-in-law's house. Now, that's all we drink. I even got my mom to try Ovaltine. She was a die-hard Hershey syrup person. She was here watching the kids, so she had to drink Rich Chocolate Ovaltine. She loved the Ovaltine taste. Now she drinks it, too.
Ovaltine. Try it for the nutrition. Keep buying it for the taste.
More Ovaltine, please.
Taking care of business. Office Depot.
Hurry into Office Depot for great savings on HP technology. Save 20% on a wide selection of HP printers after instant and mail-in savings. And don't forget your HP ink and paper. And for a computer with excellent performance and wireless mobility, the HP Pavilion TX1320 Entertainment Notebook PC is the perfect solution. On sale at Office Depot for $999.99 after $200 mail-in savings. Office Depot, taking care of business. In-store only, selection varies by location, quantities limited, no rain checks, offers expire 12/29.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Ladies and gentlemen, today it's Christmas Eve. And here at the Peter B. Collins Show, there's no political talk. And we're not taking your phone calls. The truth is, I'm not even here. This is a virtual performance, pre-recorded for your listening pleasure at this time. And if you're dashing around with your last-minute shopping, maybe you're in the kitchen cooking up a fabulous Christmas feast. Whatever you happen to be doing, I hope you'll kick back and leave the radio on. For the next 3 hours, we're going to bring you Christmas music or things that fit the seasonal theme from the Peter B. Collins Tax-Deductible Music Archives. And in our third and final hour, we'll have a visit from Dr. Elmo, the guy who brought us Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. Up to 4, 5, 6 million, I don't know how many million copies have been sold. Elmo will tell us. And as we get started, I just want to wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas, Kwanzaa greetings, and seasonal politically correct greetings of any sort that work for you. Let's get started with Chrissy Hyde and the Pretenders. I hope you're home for Christmas.
Falling down.
Live from the Left Coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show, live from San Francisco. This hour, we're going to spend with a congressional candidate, Bill Durston from Sacramento, because a listener requested it.
We'd shoot him dead and blow him up. Didn't know we were fighting for. Whenever my dad would see us playing, he'd come and spoil our fun. He'd say war is not a game, son.
That's a tune that was written by the candidate. Dr. Bill Durston joins me here on the Peter B. Collins Show this hour. Dr. Durston, thanks for coming all the way over from Sacramento to be with us today.
Well, thanks very much for inviting me.
And thank you for running for Congress again.
Well, it's an honor. I'm honored to be able to do it and to be a voice for people who want to restore our country to the principles that it was founded upon, and to basically take back our democracy.
Yeah. Now, you're a Vietnam vet, a medical doctor, and you're also a songwriter.
I'm a professional songwriter. I made $42 last year off the sale of that song.
Well, thank you for disclosing that. It'll it'll reduce the paperwork in the future. Well, let's start with the song. What caused you to write it? What's the message you wanted to impart?
The message is repeated over and over, and it's in the title. It's War is Not a Game. As you mentioned, I'm a combat veteran of Vietnam, and when I learned in 2005 that the United States Army was marketing a video game called America's Army, and when I saw the game and saw that you get points for killing people, basically, and the people in the game look suspiciously like Iraqi civilian young men, I was appalled by it.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife at the time was writing some children's songs, and so I thought I'd give my hand at it. And I put down the words and a crude melody, and my daughter helped me with the melody, and then we got some folk singer friends to record it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end result. War is not a game.
And it's up on your website at durstonforcongress.org.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And there's a slideshow that goes with it? I haven't seen it.
There is. There are slides partly from personal slides, including, as we were talking before we went on air, a picture of me with as a kid, probably a 5 or 6 year old, with two holsters and some kind of a gun in my hand. Also slides from real scenes from war and mm-hmm. points out the tragedy of war. The song's largely autobiographical.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about the war that we may have dodged just this week. This week we saw the release of a new national intelligence estimate, which contradicts the one from 2005 that Bush and Cheney have been relying on to demonize Iran. Their government is called a regime, and the army there has been designated as a terrorist force, as a precursor, an underlying legal argument to enable a presumed military assault on Iran. And I'm still scratching my head, and you know, we've been lied to so much by these two and their cohorts that I'm still looking for the December surprise. But the National Intelligence Estimate contradicts the hot, hyped rhetoric that Bush and Cheney have been using as recently as just a couple of weeks ago, the World War III image that Bush used, and his change, his shift in tone and standard to say that Iran would be subject to further sanctions and perhaps military assault because they have the knowledge to create a nuclear weapon. Not just the intention, not just the mechanical capacity, but only the knowledge. And now this has been released, and I'm trying to figure out if there's a trap here, but it seems that the intelligence community looked at this lame duck president and said, we are not going to let you screw us again, and we're not going to let you screw the country again.
I think you're right, and I certainly hope you're right. Certainly we were hearing all the drumbeat to war in Iran that we heard in the lead-up to the war in Iraq. And as we now know, the intelligence community had good evidence, the vast preponderance of evidence that Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction, absolute evidence that there was no relationship between Saddam Hussein, Iraq, and the September 11th terrorist attacks. And yet that information didn't become widely disseminated until, of course, after the invasion of Iraq. And we heard the same drumbeat. We've got this, you know, these fleets in the off the coast of Iran.
Carrier fleets, yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Ready to, I think the figure I heard was launch 10,000 airstrikes within a single day. And all of these threats. I think it's a good sign that the intelligence community, whoever was responsible for putting out the National Intelligence Estimate, did come out with this. Now, unfortunately, the Bush administration seems to be their masters of spin, and Bush is still trying to spin this, showing that, well, Iran had ambitions for a nuclear bomb, and we still have to do something preemptive. But I think and hope that you're right, that this will definitely prevent an attack on Iran during the waning years, waning year of the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm. And how do you view the way Democrats from Joe Lieberman to, well, sorry, Hillary Clinton voted for the Kyle Lieberman resolution? And this whole idea of designating a critical portion of Iran's military as a so-called terrorist group, yeah. I think is a very slippery slope, and one that Bush would love to glide down on his way into another cowboy adventure.
Yeah, absolutely. I see no purpose in calling the Iraqi Revolutionary Guard a terrorist organization. It goes back to the same type of axis of evil rhetoric that Bush inflamed much of the world with in his earlier State of the Union speech. And when Hillary Clinton said, well, this is a strong tool of diplomacy, it's the opposite of diplomacy. Calling your opponents, your adversaries' names is not diplomacy. It just causes them to back into a corner, dig in their heels, and you get this rhetoric back and forth instead of a meaningful dialogue.
Mm-hmm. So how do you position yourself in relation to the Democratic Party and to the various debates? And let's focus for the moment here on Iraq and Iran. And how progressive are you? How far from the Blue Dog Democrats are you? And more importantly, how far apart are you from your opponent, Dan Lundgren, the Republican who currently holds the third congressional seat?
I am a world apart from Dan Lundgren. But let me just say, I've been a registered Democrat all my life, but I never considered myself a politician. I just got into this race in 2006, in February of 2006. I was the president of Physicians for Social Responsibility at that time, a non-political, non-partisan group. So one promise I made to myself when I first decided to run in 2006 was not to compromise my principles in order to try to win votes. So when it comes to positioning myself with the Democratic Party or any other party, I try not to think about that, and I largely don't think about that. And not being a politician by career, I frankly don't know how to think about that. I just try to approach any issue from the point of view of what is the truth, mm-hmm. and what is right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Certainly the truth about Iraq, which many of us knew, in fact tens of millions of people worldwide knew, is that there was no reason for the United States to attack Iraq in 2003. And the same is true for Iran. We saw the fall of the Soviet Union without a single shot being fired, and the Soviet Union was a very definite threat, and particularly in the terms of nuclear weapons. So the idea of attacking Iran because Iran has nuclear ambitions is just, in my opinion, foolhardy. Mm-hmm. And we must have a diplomatic solution to the crisis with Iran and other similar issues worldwide.
We're talking with Dr. Bill Durston. He is running for Congress in the 3rd District near Sacramento, and our listeners on 1240 Talk City, KSAC. You're welcome to call in this hour. You can call in from Eureka or Monterey or anywhere else within the sound of my voice. But in particular, I invited Dr. Durston here today at the request of a listener who said, we want to hear him and we want to support.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super green nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Whole Foods Market in Monterey, Cornucopia Community Market in Carmel, Staff of Life in Santa Cruz, and New Leaf Markets in Santa Cruz and Capitola. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to
hey, this is Stephanie Miller.
Mexicali
You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself.
Imported or domestic
what a
beers?
Concept.
Visit
AM 540 KRXA.
Located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Beside the whistle cat, along a frosty road,
always on
time. I get another ring,
making me happy.
That'll take me for another ride
up in the sky.
Whoa.
Thank you.
continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. In the studio here in the Bay Area today is Dr. Bill Durston. He is a Democratic candidate for Congress in the 3rd District of California. That is the area in the Sacramento suburbs. And I don't know the district that well since it was remapped after the Burton remap plan that we're stuck with now, the incumbent protection remap plan. But Doug Ossie served, 3 terms in that district?
I think so.
Yeah. So it has become more and more conservative because over the years, some of the more progressive, or at least Democratic, representatives from Sacramento have had a tougher time holding on to their seats. The Matsui seat is about the only Democratic seat in the area. Am I right?
Well, the Matsui district is just west of the 3rd Congressional District. The 3rd Congressional is highly gerrymandered to be a Republican district.
Yeah.
But it's only a 7% Republican advantage, and that may be getting less, actually.
Mm-hmm.
The district goes all the way from a little finger in Solano County by Rio Vista, the Delta, eastern part of Sacramento County, where most of the population is. But it goes all the way to the Nevada border, Alpine County.
Mm-hmm.
We did win Alpine County, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think total of 800 votes in Alpine County.
All right.
But
solid. That's a base.
That's right. I got to speak to most of the voters in Alpine County, and I think that's how you win, is speaking to most of the voters.
All right. Let's take a phone call. Matt's on the line from Sacramento. Welcome to the program today, Matt, with Peter B. Collins and Dr. Bill Durston.
Well, I get a chance to ask a doctor this question. How do you feel about Kucinich's not-for-profit universal health care?
You know, I agree with Dennis Kucinich on most everything, and universal health care is definitely one of them.
Well, the not-for-profit part of it.
Yes. The United States is the only Western industrialized country that doesn't have some form of universal health care, and yet we pay twice as much as most of the other countries, 3 times as much as some of the other countries. And a big problem is the for-profit motivation that guides much of our health care system, particularly the health insurance industry. In the for-profit health insurance industry, the major incentive is not to provide health care for people who need it, but it's to avoid insuring anybody who's sick or likely to become sick. And that is a perverse incentive for a health care system.
And can I just offer this observation and ask you to respond? I think that our effort to deliver health care via market and profit-centered mechanisms is a total failure. And we have to recognize that and make health care a right. And if we start with that premise, then the whole delivery system would change. And for one thing, we would probably take the insurance companies way out of it or entirely out of the whole process.
Exactly.
Okay, well, I sure appreciate that. And I think, by the way, you did Vietnam, so I'd like to recommend a program that was on PBS called American Experience. And it was 2 days in October is the name of it. If you ever get a chance to see it, it will make you hate war.
Especially
imperialist-driven, they're not wars, but attacks on countries.
Okay, Matt, thank you very much. Yeah, did you want to say more about health care, Dr. Bill?
I just wanted to say that I agree with you, that it's my belief that access to necessary medical care.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network. Did you see Anthony Mason's terrific piece on Sunday morning? It was about Mike Gill, who was born, as they say, with a silver spoon in his mouth.
I was born with just about every advantage you could imagine or even wish for.
His father was Brendan Gill, a famous writer for The New Yorker. He showed Anthony Mason the 25-room house in Bronxville the family lived in.
How old were you when you moved out here?
I was 5 years old.
It would become his house after he grew up, went to Yale, and worked for J. Walter Thompson, the biggest ad agency in the world at the time.
I was what was called a creative director, and that means that my job was to encourage other people to have ideas, like an orchestra leader.
How he got where he is today, a barista at a Starbucks.
Venti non-fat latte and a tall non-fat latte, please.
After this.
Take
into Office Depot for great savings on HP technology. Save 20% on a wide selection of HP printers after instant and mail-in savings. And don't forget your HP ink and paper. And for a computer with excellent performance and wireless mobility, the HP Pavilion TX1320 Entertainment Notebook PC is the perfect solution. On sale at Office Depot for $999.99 after $200 mail-in savings. Office Depot, taking care of business. In-store only, selection varies by location, quantities limited, no rain checks, offers expire 12/29.
This holiday season, give the most eternal, unique gift of the year. Name a star after someone. I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we'll name a star after anyone on your gift list. The star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office, and we will send an incredible personalized gift package. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333, or visit starregistry.com for the gift that shines forever.
For 26 years, Mike Gill told Anthony Mason, he climbed the corporate ladder.
Did you see the end coming?
No, I was really shocked by it, which I shouldn't have been.
He was 53 when a fellow executive invited him out to breakfast.
And she said, you know, those classic words, you know, Michael, we have to let you go.
Mike Gill was devastated, didn't know what to do. His marriage fell apart. 4 years ago, he was diagnosed with a brain tumor.
You were at rock bottom when you came here.
Yeah.
Then one morning, he saw a brightly lit Starbucks store. He didn't know that they were hiring, but while he sat brooding over his latte, a woman approached him.
She said, would you like a job?
Why did you say yes?
I don't know. It was desperation or courage, but I think I just realized this is a moment I can't afford to miss.
And you know what? He tied on his apron, went to work at Starbucks, and the manager says his co-workers and the customers all love him. And he's written a book called How Starbucks Saved My Life, which Tom Hanks now wants to make into a movie. And yes, there's a happy ending.
I'm alive. I'm happier than I've ever been.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly. On August 28, Todd Endress was almost eaten alive by an 18-foot great white while surfing on Monterey Bay. A pod of 15 dolphins formed a wall between Todd and the shark, otherwise he would have died. ISARF, the International Shark Attack Research Fund, is a nonprofit foundation spearheaded by Todd to find ways to keep surfers, swimmers, and divers safe in our oceans without harming the shark. If you'd like to help, please go to ISARF.org to make your tax-deductible donation. That's ISARF.org.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue live with Democratic candidate for Congress, Dr. Bill Durston from the Sacramento area. He wants to challenge Dan Lundgren next fall for the seat called Congressional District 3 here in California. And by the way, the website is DurstonForCongress.org. Durston, D-U-R-S-T-O-N. That's D-U-R-S-T-O-N. Don't use other vowels. It'll just confuse you. And .org on the end of that, Durston for Congress. And can people contribute to the campaign at the website, Dr. Bill?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's one of the biggest challenges is trying to play this game where it takes millions of dollars to get the word out.
Now, Diane, your wife is here. Do you buy lottery tickets every week? No, never bought one at all.
But anyway, any contributions would obviously be greatly appreciated and would help toward electing better representation in Congress. So mm-hmm. Thank you for putting in a plug for that.
You bet. Now, let's take a call, and then I got a couple of questions for you, because, let's see, we have a gentleman, Dan, from San Jose, Costa Rica, part of our international audience. Dan, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. Are you there, Dan? Oh, I guess he didn't stay on the line. So call us back, Dan. I've got a couple of people who email me from Costa Rica. They are snowbirds who love it there, and I took a vacation to that country a couple of years ago. It's just beautiful, so I'm a little bit jealous of them. Well, let me take this opportunity to size up your competition, because I've known Dan Lundgren for quite a while. When he was the Attorney General of California, I had him on my San Francisco radio show quite often, because I love to tangle with him. He and I agree on very few things. Maybe I'd have to really scratch to see where we did agree going back 10 or 15 years. But what strikes me about him is his outsized ego. As Attorney General, he had a special parking space in the underground garage of the Justice Building in Sacramento. He had a private elevator. And those are just examples of the kinds of perks that he insisted on for himself, having come out of Congress, serving many terms, and then running statewide. Of course, his ultimate goal was to run for governor, and that aspiration was thwarted. But it doesn't seem to stop him. And I'm wondering if you've seen any indications that he's found any humility in recent years.
No. And that's one of the reasons I'm running for him, running against him. Like yourself, I differ with him on virtually every major issue. But more than that, it's his arrogance, the way he bullies people mm-hmm. who don't agree with him, including his own constituents. This came out during the three debates that he agreed to last year. During the first debate, he made a comment to the effect that some people confuse aggressive means of interrogation with torture. Mm-hmm. And the audience laughed at him. And he made a rude statement about my supporters needed to have more respect. And he made similar absurd statements during the second and third debates and similar rude statements toward my supporters. In that third debate, I looked him in the eye and I said, you know, my supporters are your constituents and they deserve to be treated with respect.
Mm-hmm. Where is he on torture? Does he have a Mukasey problem?
He definitely does. I quoted him from the Elk Grove debate last year, and just this last Wednesday at a town hall meeting in Folsom, I should put town hall in quotes. These are basically Lundgren infomercials paid for by taxpayer money.
So they use the Bush rules, only friendly people can attend?
Anybody can attend, but he cherry picks the audience.
I see.
We've developed a technique. Mm-hmm. You don't sit by anybody who he knows and so on. But one lady did get in the question, what's your position on waterboarding? And he said, I cannot say, per se, that waterboarding is torture.
Really?
Absolutely. And so if there's
John McCain can. He has no difficulty identifying that.
John McCain, who was tortured himself as a prisoner of war in Vietnam, has said flat out, waterboarding is exquisite torture. And if there's one issue that I think best sums up the differences between Dan Lundgren and myself, it's the issue of torture. I am opposed to torture unequivocally under any circumstances. It's morally reprehensible and it's forensically unreliable. You mm-hmm. don't get useful information, reliable information with torture. Lundgren voted against the House version of the McCain Amendment to prohibit the use of torture by U.S. troops. He has repeatedly condone torture, or at least equivocated on things like waterboarding, which is basically controlled near drowning,
right,
and obviously a form of torture.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the NSA? I'm very concerned about the way the Bush administration intentionally broke the law, and Democrats have attempted to paper over it. The legislation that passed this August that amended the FISA law is offensive to me, and it flies in the face of our constitutional right to privacy and a probable cause element in the Fourth Amendment. And yet we see the Republicans colluded with by many Democrats, including Senator Feinstein of California, eager to legalize the intentional lawbreaking of this administration and regularize the monitoring of American citizens on a daily basis.
I know. You know, I think too many of our people in our legislature are still so traumatized by the September 11th terrorist attacks that they are willing to sacrifice our freedoms.
I think that's too generous. I'm sorry. The trauma of 9/11, our leaders should have overcome that by now and returned to some sense of constitutional balance. And the whole, we cannot win by sacrificing our rights.
I agree.
That is not a way to security for this country.
I agree. What I said during one of the debates with Lundgren is, that we can't compensate for the incompetence of the Bush administration by sacrificing our civil liberties. It goes back to, I think, Benjamin Franklin said that those who would sacrifice liberty for some security deserve neither.
Mm-hmm. Eric in Sacramento, you're next for Dr. Bill Durston here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Peter. Enjoy your show. Doctor, I certainly wish you luck in your upcoming election. Unfortunately, I'm a fifth districter, and I'm not very happy with my own congresswoman, and I'm unfortunate that you're not running against her in the primary because she has not been very supportive of, I think, most of the constituents in this, Democrats in this county, and that she's pretty much backed this war, and she always equivocates when it comes to stopping war funding. My question to you, Doctor, is, one, if elected, would you be willing to cut off funding for this war? And then two, would you be willing to support the articles of impeachment that have been brought forth by Congressman Kucinich, who I support? And on that note, Peter, I'd say, what do we have to do to give him notice? We have to vote with our pockets. We have to give him money. That's the only thing they pay attention to, is how much money the guy gets.
All right. Got you. Thanks, Eric. Go ahead, Dr. Bill.
With regard to the war and occupation in Iraq, I, as a U.S. congressman, will not vote for 1 cent for further military operation in Iraq that is not tied to a prompt, orderly, and complete withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq.
Thank you.
With regard to impeachment, that was one of the first things that I said in the campaign in 2006. The Bush and Cheney and others have violated the public trust. They violated the U.S. Constitution. As Peter said, with regard to the FISA law, they have violated federal law, and they have violated common decency. If ever there were a president and vice president who deserved to be impeached, it's Bush and Cheney.
Well, how can you say that? There is no evidence of sexual escapades in the Oval Office or the vice president's suite.
Hey, doctor, I have one other question for you.
Go ahead, Eric.
And that question would be, with regard to Lundgren, the fact that he's been a supporter of this administration all the way through, including the infringement on our constitutional rights and destruction of it, the war, et cetera. I mean, it seems to me that it's a strategy. You're just going to paint him to Bush, right? And can you use volunteers? That's the other question. How do I sign up if I want to help?
Well, we can definitely use volunteers. If you go to the Durston for Congress website, there. If you go to the homepage, there on the right side, I believe there's a place to contribute, and there's also a place to volunteer. And we can use all the volunteers we can get, including from neighboring districts. Yeah, we don't have to stretch the truth at all to say that Lundgren is in virtual lockstep with the Bush administration on almost every issue.
And one of the things that fascinates me, Dr. Bill Durston, is having watched Lundgren and knowing his track record. Back in 1986, he was a member of the House and had quite seniority, and he chaired the committee that wrote the immigration reform legislation that is now widely derided by the Tancredo right as the amnesty bill that gave us these 12 million illegals. And yet he breezes right past that history and talks like Tom Tancredo now about, I won't vote for any amnesty for the illegals who are in this country.
You're right. You know, he, like many other right-wing politicians, he preys on the politics of hatred and fear, mm-hmm. and he also relies on the political amnesia of the American public. With regard to the Vietnam War is another example of where he relies on the amnesia of the American public. But you're right, he did vote for, or he helped get that bill through that provided amnesty, and I think it was good bill as far as it went. Right now, we've got a schizophrenic policy as far as immigration goes. Mm-hmm. We know, particularly in California, that we depend upon the labor mm-hmm. of the undocumented immigrants. Lundgren refers to them as illegal aliens. I refer to them as fellow human beings.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem. It's a complex problem for which there's no single simple solution. But if we're ever going to make progress on the immigration issue, we have to reject the politics of hatred and fear and develop policies based on understanding and reason.
You know what's interesting? We've been talking a lot about the YouTube Republican debate from Florida, and CNN has repeatedly used immigration as the lead topic in debates that it is managing. And the polls show that even among Republicans, immigration ranks with like 10 or 12% of Republicans as the most pressing issue before the nation today. And in that, it ranks fifth or sixth in the concerns of Republicans. For Democrats, it's down like at number 10 or number 12. Yet the media plays this as the wedge issue that will cause sparks to fly. And I just believe that it is a whole game played around hate. They're trying to whip up hate and division among Americans today.
There's no doubt about it in my mind. I mean, illegal immigration, if you're a Native American, has been going on, you'd say, since 1492.
Yeah. I've got one of those shirts. It's got the original Homeland Security chief, right. And it's a Sitting Bull.
Right. But remember, in 2004, all of a sudden, the issue of gay marriage was raised by the neocons, the mm-hmm. right-wingers. Lundgren was one of those who co-authored a proposed constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. Again, I mean, how can that ever be important enough to be a constitutional amendment? And all the other amendments, by the way, of course, guarantee rights, not take away mm-hmm. rights, and particularly from rights of a minority segment of our population. But the immigration issue was kind of, I think, the wedge issue that they hoped would help them in the 2006 elections. And fortunately, I think they kind of shot themselves in the foot with it.
Yeah. John in Carmel Valley, join us next here on the Peter B. Collins Show with Dr. Bill Durston.
Two questions. What do you think of Pelosi's stand against any kind of impeachment proceedings and making that so public from the beginning? And then I heard today on an NPR show what sounded like a Republican, at least a supporter of Bush, strongly saying that the release of this Iranian, the information about Iran's development or possible development of a bomb by the Bush administration was to show everybody that Bush has broken with Cheney and the neocons on a war footing toward Iran. What do you think of those two, if you can get them both in?
Sure. With regard to Nancy Pelosi at the very beginning of this session of Congress saying impeachment is off the table, I was very disappointed with that. Nancy Pelosi has been in politics for many, many years. I'm brand new to politics. But as I said at the beginning of the show, I am approaching running for Congress and hopefully being a congressman from the point of view is, what is the truth? And the truth is the Bush administration, Bush and Cheney and cohorts, broke the law, violated the Constitution, violated the Geneva Convention, and should be impeached. And I would have hoped that Congresswoman Pelosi would have, left impeachment certainly on the table.
Well, at minimum, she could have said, I'm going to get out of the way.
Exactly.
I'm going to let the will of the people and the will of the Judiciary Committee carry this forward as far as it may go. I've never felt that impeachment should have been the Democrats' top priority,
right.
But to take it off the table is to unilaterally disarm in the face of radicals in the White House willing to break the law to get their way.
Exactly. And the Bush administration can still do a lot of harm. I mean, they still could launch an attack on Iraq that, as Bush alluded to, could on Iran that, as Bush alluded to, could lead to World War III. With regard to whether Bush and Cheney have a split, I think that Cheney is still largely the puppeteer and Bush is largely the puppet, and I don't think that'll ever change as long as Cheney's still vice president.
We're going to take a quick break and return with Dr. Bill Durston here on the Peter B. Collins Show. The switchboard's jammed, so we'll get to as many calls as we can in the next segment. Our number's toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, and his website, durstonforcongress.org, D-U-R-S-T-O-N, Durston for Congress. More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Jim's Restaurant is celebrating its 8th anniversary at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Join the party. Enjoy Jim's lunch specials for just $5.75 and dinner specials for only $6.50 per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Holistic and alternative practitioners and individuals love the energy from the Amethyst Biomat. It offers natural and effective heat therapy in NASA-based technology. Far infrared heat simulates the immune system by causing an artificial fever and stimulating the immune system with multiple benefits. Improve many bodily problems with alkalizing your pH, removing acidic waste deposits responsible for most illnesses. Just lie on it to benefit with five different sizes. Give the power to create a fever and cure most diseases. To find out more about what the Amethyst Biomat can do for you, visit www.amethystbiomat.com. That's AmethystBiomat.com. Or call Rachel at 1-888-337-7262. That's 1-888-337-7262.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour, and apologize for some of our technical issues today. We have a computer that came down with a virus, and, well, it's under a doctor's care. In fact, there's a doctor sitting in front of it right now. He is Dr. Bill Durston, candidate for Congress in the Sacramento area, Democrat who wants to challenge Dan Lundgren next November. Do you have any competition in the primary, Dr. Bill?
I don't believe so.
Uh-huh. Not so far?
No.
Uh-huh. When would they have to register? I'm not sure. For the June...
You have to file with the County Registrar or Secretary of State in early March.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
I don't know if that means people, you know, think I'm so good that nobody could beat me, or if they think it's absolutely crazy to run against Lundgren. Always the former.
Well, you know, I've taken some heat because some of my listeners disagree with me on Cindy Sheehan's intention to run against Speaker Pelosi in her home district in San Francisco. I don't, you know, she has every right to do so, and I don't object on that basis. I just think that the visibility she has could be better employed against a vulnerable Republican instead of trying to open up a flank to Nancy Pelosi's left. And I have disagreements like you do about impeachment, about the NSA, about many things with Nancy Pelosi, but they won't be resolved by running a quixotic campaign against her. She's not going to lose. I'm pretty certain of that. I worked on a campaign of hers in 1996, and we moved her up from 78% to 84% in her reelect. So even with the differences I have, I've said, hey, you know, Cindy Sheehan should run against John Doolittle. Well, he's got Charlie Brown.
Right.
But there are vulnerable Republicans in this state, and that's where we should put our efforts, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to second-guess Cindy Sheehan. I met Cindy Sheehan before she gained national fame. The American Friends Service Committee, the Friends, they call them, were doing mm-hmm. the Boots exhibit, which back in those days, back in 2004, 2005, they had 1,000 boots, one pair of boots for each U.S. serviceman or servicewoman killed in Iraq. Now the exhibit would be so big that they can't take it around anymore. But that's when I first met her, and, you know, I... she will go down in history as being one of the first people to publicly point out that this emperor has new clothes,
right.
has no clothes.
Yeah.
And she kept asking the question, what noble cause did my son Casey die for? If your son was killed in Iraq, I think you can pretty much say anything you want, do mm-hmm. anything you want, as mm-hmm. long as you believe it to be the truth. And I think that's what she's doing.
Yeah. Dave and Eureka, you're next. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Peter. Dr. Bill, I've been studying a very ugly reality for a long time. The problem's worse than even I thought. We have neocons in power, in government, because they cheat. Voting machines were designed so that they could cheat, and they can cheat big time. Whenever you run a poll that doesn't involve these computers, and that's what a voting machine is, Kucinich and Edwards are beating Hillary many times over. Put the computers on, and they bring them back down. So this next primary, the Republicans fully intend to take away more than 90% of Kucinich's votes and give them to Hillary. If they can do that, they can do damn near anything. I think I said what I wanted to say.
Okay, Dave, thank you. What do you think about the machines? And are you confident running under the new rules that Deborah Bowen has imposed, which rolls back the use of the electronic machines to the bare minimum?
You know, I think we all know that something very, very strange happened in Ohio, where Diebold promised before the chief of that company promised before he would deliver Ohio to Bush. And then the exit polls were widely discrepant with the reported results, so discrepant that I think there's a study from the statistics department at the University of California, Berkeley said that was statistically impossible.
Correct.
I don't know all the technicalities of Deborah Bowen's new regulations. I have met Deborah Bowen, and I have great admiration for her. She's a highly intelligent woman. And if anybody can make the voting fair in California, I believe that Deborah Bowen can do it.
Mike in Fair Oaks, you're next for Dr. Bill Durston. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Durston, does your campaign have plans to bring young people into the process? My daughter and I worked on your campaign last time, and we just didn't see a lot of young people getting out and supporting you. And I think there's a significant number that you could reach out to.
Yeah, if you have the answer to that, let me know. Believe me, we tried. And as I said at the beginning of the program, we got in the race very late last year with no political experience. We learned a lot. But the people who we paid to work on the campaign were, for the most part, young people. We're employing the music. We've got War Is Not a Game song, other songs. We had events with dances. We had a salsa dance. I'll be going to Sac State this coming Friday. There's a movie night there.
Just work on your thumbs and get those text messaging skills up. Thanks for the question, Mike. I want to jump and include one more here. It's Joe in Sacramento. Welcome, Joe. You're on the air.
Yes. Peter, thanks so much for giving Bill a forum. I'm convinced, and many of us who have supported him and know him, that the more people who get to hear him think through a problem will realize what a great choice he is. I'd like to ask him, Dr. Durston, what are some of your thoughts about what the United States government may be doing incorrectly or illegally or unconstitutionally in Guantanamo Bay?
And give it to us in 20 seconds, please.
In 20 seconds, I believe that Guantanamo Bay is a travesty of justice. The best evidence is that those people, very few of those people, are real threats, and they've been deprived of any reasonable right to a fair trial.
Dr. Bill Durston, great to see you. Good luck to you on the campaign trail. I want to direct people to durstonforcongress.org, and spell Durston, D-U-R-S-T-O-N. Dr. Bill Durston, great to see you. We'll talk again.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Coming up next, more on the Peter B. Collins Show. Visit our website at peterbcollins.com. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, explain the value of wines made from organic grapes.
You know, I think that drinking organic wines is what Tony Robbins described as a class one experience. Wines made with organic grapes feel good. They taste extremely good. Just like an organic tomato or a strawberry tastes usually better than a conventional counterpart. They are good. There's plenty of scientific evidence about the health benefits of drinking wine in moderation. Drinking organic wines also is good for other people in that you're supporting farmers. And last but not least, it's definitely good then for the higher good.
The Organic Wine Company. Log on to ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Carnage, incarnation. Six people killed in the rural Washington town.
Which makes this an enormous crime.
The day after an escaped tiger kills a visitor, the San Francisco Zoo remains locked down.
There's an ongoing investigation regarding how that situation occurred.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Jim Taylor. Six people killed in a house in the small rural town of Carnation, about 20 miles east of Seattle, Washington.
A man and a woman in their 50s, a man and a woman in their 30s, a little girl about 6 years old, and a little boy about 3 years old.
Sergeant John Urquhart, King County Sheriff's Department. Investigators say they're still searching for more bodies in the thick woods surrounding the home.
They have told us and they've told the neighbors that they don't believe there's any concern for anybody else's safety, which would suggest that they think that this was specifically targeted to the people who were killed here.
Rick Price, reporter for Cairo TV, the six killings happened on Christmas Eve.
The bodies were discovered this morning by a co-worker of one of the victims who works for the Postal Service, and apparently this particular victim was extremely reliable, and it would have been very unusual for her not to come to work.
Murder-suicide is being ruled out. No arrest made. Now this.
Happy Honda Days!
Can I help you guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're having a tough time deciding between these Honda trucks.
Okay.
Well, what do you recommend that has lots of room and can handle the North Pole?
Well, the Pilot is available with four-wheel drive and has seating for eight.
Oh, that sounds perfect.
Make this a season to remember. Think Honda for the holidays.
All right, then. We'll take the Pilot.
Wonderful. Will you gentlemen be joint owners?
Oh, no. It's a gift for the big guy.
Yeah, we make wonderful toys, but our cars stink.
I see.
Happy Honda Days ends January 2nd.
Reason number 9 to switch to Geico. There's nothing sweeter than saving money on car insurance. It's one of those rare opportunities in life where you can thumb your nose at the system and say, okay, system, listen up. I just got a better deal with Geico. Great savings, personal service 24/7, and the latest in online technology. Of course, the system may sulk for a day or two, but you're going to feel a lot better.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Still closed. Still a crime scene. The San Francisco Zoo.
There are three victims in total. One was deceased. Two are at San Francisco General Hospital.
San Francisco Chief of Police Heather Fong. Authorities say 17-year-old Carlos Sousa Jr. killed when Tatiana the Siberian tiger escaped its exhibit, streaking across a distance of about 60 yards, attacking three people. A lot of commotion as police arrived, drawing their weapons.
They did not fire immediately for fear that they would not be able to contain their fire at the animal. When the yelling was occurring, the animal turned and now turned towards the officers, and it is at that time that they fired and dispatched the animal.
CBS News correspondent Manuel Gallegos.
This was not Tatiana's first attack. Last year, she reached through a cage and mauled a zookeeper, badly damaging the woman's arms. Now the rare exotic animal is dead, and zookeepers are devastated by the loss of human and animal life.
The zoo expected to reopen tomorrow, the tiger exhibit to remain closed. We're days away from the Iowa caucuses and then the New Hampshire primary, and look who's leading the pack of Republican contenders.
Huckabee is holding on to a lead out there, but the question is, can he counteract a combination of both Mitt Romney's attacks and also the heavy media scrutiny that he has received since emerging as the frontrunner?
Jonathan Martin, Politico.com, on the battle between Mike Huckabee and Mitt Romney.
This thing appears to be coming down to a battle between Huckabee's motivation and Romney's organization.
As for the Democrats race, CBS News correspondent Jim Axelrod with the Clinton campaign in Iowa.
I think they feel that this is neck and neck. They, of course, will tell you that they feel good about the chances, but at the same time, several high-level Clinton advisors are saying that, look, they can survive not finishing first here. One even told me today they could survive a third-place finish here.
In the nation's capital, CBS's Sam Litzinger has his stopwatch out.
Okay, time this with me.
The Senate will come to order. Under the previous order, the Senate stands in recess until Friday, December 28, 2007, at 10 a.m.
Democratic Senator Jim Webb went into the Senate chamber, gaveled it into session, then 9 seconds later, he gaveled it out of session. That means the Senate was technically not in recess, and because it wasn't, President Bush couldn't bypass Senate confirmation and unilaterally install some of his nominees to office without Senate approval. Democratic leaders plan to keep the Senate in pro forma sessions every 2 or 3 days to keep the president in check. Sam Litzinger, CBS News, Washington.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
So far this year, OnStar made over 15,000 calls to check on customers involved in collisions.
OnStar Emergency, I've been located on Interstate 76 westbound. Are there any injuries?
Well, I'm not real sure yet. I think a wheel flew off a car ahead of me and hit me. I'm by myself.
I will contact the 911 center.
Dispatch.
I have a car crash with airbag deployment. I'm going to go ahead and put you through.
Sir, what happened?
Something smashed into the front of my car. It was raining and it's dark. All I saw was this big thing coming at me, and I do see the wheel. It's a wheel and tire.
Okay, hang tight, sir. We're sending help now.
If your vehicle is in a crash, it can send OnStar an alert, along with crash details, so emergency responders send the right help.
Would you like me to remain on the line with you?
No, that's fine. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Contacting you if you've been in a crash is just one of 9 OnStar services standard with the first year of your OnStar-equipped vehicle. Visit OnStar.com to find out which one is right for you.
On this day after Christmas.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Thanks for joining us this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. Have you heard about the culture wars? What side are you on? I just know we need more culture in this country.
Making a living the old hard way. Taking and giving my day by day. I take snow and rain and bright sunshine.
Taking the land.
Yeah, there's a relic from the Peter B. Collins tax-deductible music archives. It's Tommy James and the Shondells. Dragging the line. Welcome to this hour of the program. There's a new book out called Sin No More, subtitled From Abortion to Stem Cells, Understanding Crime, Law, and Morality in America. It's co-authored by Daniel Hilliard and John Dombrink. Professor Dombrink joins us this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. He is a professor of criminology, law, and society at the University of California at Irvine. Welcome to our program, John.
Thank you, Peter.
How are you today?
Good.
Good.
I think we have the rain coming through, but I love to see it in California.
Well, good. There's a lot to talk about in terms of the culture wars, and let me start off with the recent elections, 2000, 2004, and 2006.
Sure.
Because the argument was made that the 2004 election revolved around cultural issues, including the various anti-gay marriage ballot measures that were put on by Republicans in, 25 or maybe even 30 states. And so these cultural issues have been used for political wedge issues quite effectively. And give us your sense of the evolution of this process and if we're actually moving into more positive territory.
Well, I am, thank you, a well-framed question. I am always a glass half-full person, so I am at the end. But when we were sitting in 2004, we have done work in this area before. I've done work on gambling, work on kind of the snapshot of America at different points in the 90s. Dan and I did a book on assisted suicide in 2001 where we focused on what went on in Oregon. And we were getting ready to try to do a snapshot of how America was on these issues, but nothing crystallized it as much as the 2004 elections, which suddenly, from the exit polls and the New York Times, within a day of it, said that the largest group voting for the re-election of President Bush were motivated by his stance on moral values and values issues, so-called values voters. And besides wishing that it were not true, but we were kind of scratching our heads saying, gee, that doesn't seem like the America we've been living in all these years and writing about. And there were some very good panels soon after that that were convened. C-SPAN had them together. I think they were at the Joan Shorenstein Baroni Center and different things on journalism. And eventually you saw some kind of stepping back from that. People began to realize that really terrorism, two categories combined, was more important, that education and healthcare domestic issues combined was more important. But to those that had worked to bring voters to the polls in larger numbers than the Democrats thought would come, part of the idea was the second Bush presidency would be some return on that performance, that contribution. And so as we focused it in November 2004 and talked to the publisher, NYU Press, it certainly was a different time than December 2007.
And wasn't part of this the smokescreen that was used to persuade evangelicals and other values voters that the Bush administration had their best interests at heart, and if reelected would give them more conservative Supreme Court justices and, you know, more abstinence-only programming and those kinds of things that comprise kind of red meat for the evangelical right?
Yeah, I know that that you're a fan of Thomas Frank, the historian who wrote the book What's the Matter with Kansas, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But the person I think of, this fellow David Kuo, who wrote a book in the last year and a half. And
sure, he was the guy who worked in the faith-based office at the White House
absolutely.
And then went public with the clear hypocrisy that was showed on a daily basis.
Right, so he sent up the missile saying, you know, I sat inside and watched this and so forth, and the question was, is it all symbolism, empty promises, and so forth? And when you go back to Frank, the question is, you know, what's driving, other than winning, what's driving this coalition that's being put together, if ultimately the payoff are for the people who have economic interests or foreign policy interests?
Mm-hmm.
And there certainly were crumbs. I mean, you couldn't go through the Samuel Alito hearings or the John Roberts hearings to some extent without seeing the payoff. No one would have expected someone more centrist than that. But
right.
I do think those days are gone.
We're talking with John Dombrink. He's a professor at UC Irvine and the co-author of this new book called Sin No More. Your calls and comments are welcome this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 1-888-573-8372. Now, John, one of the questions that surfaces here when you talk about values and when you talk about people who describe themselves as deeply religious and that their political choices are heavily informed by their religious views and their religious practices, it continues to flummox me, and I've talked with many progressive religious figures about this, that their values extend to what I consider to be petty and private decisions, as opposed to the bigger issues of what I consider to be the gross immorality of the war on Iraq and our continuing occupation there, the real moral violations that the Bush administration, in my view, is guilty of for the mismanagement of the government that was highlighted by Katrina, but certainly not limited to that response. And yet we see them able to gloss over what I consider to be the big-ticket morality issues of our time, to focus on the private decisions and behavior of other people.
Right. In my undergraduate or graduate courses, and we had a wonderful course, just a, kind of a special topics course on the culture wars in the spring with undergraduates, you know, 19, 20-year-olds sitting there, were reading some of Reverend Jim Wallace's book, of course, God's Politics. We're talking about George Lakoff from Berkeley and
mm-hmm.
his issues about framing. We were having a very lively time, really, at the moment, or maybe on the downside of the moment. But the issue about religion is obviously is throughout the book. That said, I'm not a sociologist of religion. I don't know if one who picked up my book would say what a contribution this is to the way I understand the world, but I certainly read their books both the people who are Michael Lerner out of Berkeley, Jim Wallace, who are talking about reimagining or repositioning or coming back into the debate, but as well as those who study it. And as a sociologist, I, you know, go back to the empirical things, which is to say that what was odd in, or what's the paradox in our book, I guess, as we talk about the bishop, the archbishop in St. Louis, who's denying communion to John Kerry. You know, they had Senator McCaskill, who recently elected in a very close election, and of course, along with the stem cell vote there in 2006. And they denied her to be the speaker at her daughter's Catholic high school graduation, you know, with, you know, on the petty scale. But when you get down in, into the pews, as I like to say, and you look across the Catholics, for example, you see that Catholics tend to be more centrist. There is a portion that, that Pew Charitable Trust, their group calls modernists, we would call progressives. There's a group at the end who are clearly conservative and more in line with Rome and with bishops and the cardinals. When you look at the white evangelicals, and Pew, of course, and others have always said, well, we have to take the black evangelicals out of this, because even though they might be socially conservative, at the end of the day, they vote Democratic because they know, like Thomas Frank said, they vote for their economics, they vote for civil rights, they vote Democratic. So the white evangelicals are there separate, and of course, we all know very small group would be a progressive, and we would have Jim Wallace there. A pretty small group, actually, before recently, would be in the moderate or centrist category, and it would tend to be a very large conservative group. And I think a couple of things that happen. I think over time, the folks within that have, I don't know if it's a theological awakening or a broadening or whatever you had, and I think they themselves who have been pushing this movement, the younger ones certainly, said, you know, that this isn't a motivating force for us. So this Reverend Rick Warren here in Orange County with the Saddleback Church, Senator Obama and Senator Brownback spoke at his church while back, Senator Clinton just did. And so he's refocused his folks on AIDS in Africa. There's a group on evangelicals for looking at global warming that he and one of the people who's fairly high up in that organization have looked at. And they've bumped up against the Dr. Dobsons, the late Reverend Falwell, and so forth. And I think there's a generational change, which I certainly welcome. And so from the outside, if you're not in that group, you can say, oh, my gosh. And if you're secular, you go, gee, it seems to be a largely religious country. Is this what we have to deal with? But I think there's a lot of gradations in an optimistic bent. Maybe they become more like the Catholics, at which point I think the Catholics look like America. You know,
well, I also think that evangelicals are entitled to be disillusioned with playing politics at all after the way they've been used and abused by the neocons.
And that certainly seems to be what I monitor a number of things that come in, and the 2008 elections, not to jump, you know, chronologically to you, but, you know, this whole casting about to find who will be our standard bearer has been this issue of kind of real politics versus, you know, do I want to be at the seat of power? Do I want purity? The issue heretofore for most of the 20th century, the people we talk about who are fundamentalists or evangelicals, their world was an inward world. They were interested in keeping the world out and trying to keep some purity. They said the world is a place that will corrupt us, and it was Falwell and his group and the Moral Majority and later the Christian Coalition in the late 70s and early 80s that brought it back in. They contributed to the Reagan Revolution, certainly. And I do think that, you know, as a betting person, which I guess I have to be, you would have to say in 2008 that I think somebody will say in December 2008 that the turnout was down among these folks because they've
we got to take a break.
Turned away.
We'll return with John Dombrich. He's co-author of the new book Sin No More. We're talking about the culture wars and how the Republicans keep getting the God lovers to vote their way. So if you have a question or comment, there's a lot to talk about this hour. Call me now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372. Log on to our website for podcasts and a picture of your humble host at peterbcollins.com.
KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Pam and Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos on the Christmas season.
We have the tree, we have refreshments. It's turned out to be a really big season for us.
Someone was in the other day who was telling their companion who had been there for the first time that, oh, and they also do Christmas, and you should see it with all the lights. It's just beautiful. So.
It's one of the prettiest times of the year.
Yeah, Christmas is fun. I mean, we start to kick off with for the season, the first weekend in November with an open house, and we have homemade refreshments. In December, we have a live green wreath workshop where people can come and make their own green wreaths.
Call us at 685-1626, and we keep lists of anyone who's interested in the classes. Schedule them accordingly. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1, heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn. If you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find. The Potting Shed.
Gifts for gardeners and everyone. We're hard to find, but it's worth it.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, PattyRossCarmel.com.
And let's take a look at traffic here on KRXA. We want to mention that the CHP is telling us no problems reporting Monterey, Santa Cruz, or Salinas at this point, although we're going to talk about some road work in just a second. I also want to mention that we have some slow traffic, starting off with eastbound 183, it's a little bit sluggish from Castroville into Salinas. Also looking at eastbound 25, slow and go out of Gilroy into, it looks like, Hollister at this point. Some road work that you need to know about. Santa Cruz, a northbound 1 and M line, the off-ramp closed into the summer of 2008, and northbound 9 between the middle and Western Avenue, left lane closed for construction there until February 29th. Well, this report brought to you by Walt Disney Pictures, now available on Channel 1 Demand with Comcast Digital Cable. Walt Disney's Pictures, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. Order it with a click of your TV remote. And that is a look at traffic here on KRXA.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. So, hey, what's the matter with Kansas? That was the title of a great book published 3-4 years ago by Thomas Frank, and he's been back on our show a few times. He said I was the only one who actually played Kansas music on his book tour,
And I believe he's working on a follow-up, but I haven't seen it yet. We continue our conversation this hour with John Dombrink. He is a professor of criminology, law, and society at UC Irvine, co-author of this new book called Sin No More. We're talking about the culture wars. And the premise of Frank's book is why would progressive people from Kansas had a steep tradition of Alf Landon and farmers in the Progressive Party, why would they, starting with the Reagan years, start to turn more and more conservative and vote against what we would perceive as their self-interest?
Right.
And we continue to see this in many sectors of the American electorate, where somehow wedge issues and cultural issues and others are used to get people to go to the polls and select a candidate who doesn't support their basic needs and interests, but does, key in or harmonize with them on these so-called cultural values. And what's your comment on that, John?
You know, I love this book. I've used this book. I heard him speak at UC Irvine. I used his talks in my class, and at an early point, of course. And the question, he raises the false consciousness question, which is why do people do things that ultimately act against their economic interests? And they're not piddling. I mean, jobs are being moved out and so forth because of the coalitions that were formed. But all of those of us who have seen the focus on the blockades of the clinics and so forth and realized that Kansas was used as a center ground for that, obviously there was something going on. Former Senator Santorum, thankfully, mm-hmm. wrote in his book, It Takes a Family, which in some ways really was meant as a response to Hillary Clinton, It Takes a Village. But really, I read it as a response to Frank, because it says, no, we value some things more than economics, more things than money, this moral calculus we have. And I don't agree with him, but I think, and aside from the man on dogs oddity things he said in there, but he says, apropos of that, these things matter more to us. And I think they did in Kansas, but what's really striking to me now is I just saw something, I think, last month, that the Kansas Republican Party has said no to funding somebody who wanted to keep pushing on this, and they said, this has become of less value to us, less return to us, more risky to us. So Thomas Frank would be a better person to say it, but even in Kansas, people have backed off the strategy of going to the moral issues and presuming they trump the economic issues.
Yeah, and one of my favorite lines from Frank was that these candidates promise the voters, say, to end abortion rights, but they deliver tax cuts for the rich or a war in Iraq. Let's take a phone call. Dave is calling from Marina. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Professor Dombrink.
Well, hi, Peter and Professor. I just love religion. It's my favorite topic. Anyways, I just like to say, what do you think? It was really a surprise to me that as soon as Pat Robertson endorsed Giuliani, Huckabee's dramatic rise in the polls. Is there bad blood between Huckabee and the Robertson crowd?
First of all, Dave, it's Huckabee. There's no L in Huckabee. but we got about 30 seconds here, John. What's your reaction there?
There's so many things swirling around in a campaign season. I certainly monitor those, and certainly those things both did happen. But the fracturing, I guess you would say, of those social conservatives who had been so unified behind George Bush, of course, in his reelection, in search of a Fred Thompson, in search of and then for Pat Robinson basically to say, I'm going to hug a front runner. And part of my response is, why did we just get dragged through these 15 years of this if at the end of the day you can embrace a pro-choice?
Because Rudy promised to put strict constructionist right-wing nut judges on the Supreme Court, and he owns 9/11. That seems to be enough for Pat Robertson. Thank you, Dave. John Dombrink will stay with us for the rest of this hour. So if you want to talk about the culture wars, call us now, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
What happens when the generosity just won't stop? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. It all began spontaneously.
At 8 a.m., one of our regular customers came in for her normal little iced tea. and just decided that she wanted to wish Merry Christmas to the car behind her and buy their beverages.
That's Michelle, the manager at the Starbucks in Marysville, Washington, who says that when the next person at the drive-up found that her drink had been paid for, she decided to do the same thing for the customer behind her.
We had a lady come in yesterday that just wanted a tall tea. And behind her, she paid for two grande mochas and two kids' cocos.
And within about 24 hours, about 500 people had accepted free drinks and then paid for the people behind them. In fact, sometimes they paid for several people.
We've had people come in for a $1.50 drip coffee, and they want to buy the next three cars behind them.
Now, you would think that people who drive up knowing their drinks are going to be paid for would just order the top-of-the-line Frappuccino Eggnog Latte and break the bank. But the culture of altruism became so contagious, price didn't matter. And if somebody couldn't afford the drink behind them?
We have a little pot of money that just keeps growing. Somebody can't cover the car behind them, but they really want to be a part of it. We have that money from other customers to say, hey, you know, it doesn't matter. Their tab is covered and so is yours, and have a wonderful holiday.
It's crazy. This is America. You're supposed to pay for what you want, not somebody else. It turns the theory of the free market upside down.
Wouldn't that be beautiful?
In all, 1,013 people paid it forward at the Marysville Starbucks until number 1,014 broke the chain. Now this.
This holiday season, give the most eternal, unique gift of the year. Name a star after someone. I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we'll name a star after anyone on your gift list. The star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office, and we will send an incredible personalized gift package. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com for the gift that...
Cynthia from Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Carmel, and we have something new, a unique opportunity to give yourself or someone special the gift of consultation with nationally respected life coach and career mentor, Raymond Davi. Paul and I know firsthand the empowerment Ray has to offer. Discover how changes can propel you where you want to go in the areas of personal and career growth or planning goals for ongoing success, as well as insights for your work-life balance. Don't hesitate. Call and reserve your 90-minute appointment or purchase a gift certificate now. Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, 624-4955 or www.pilgrimsway.com.
Don't your children deserve the very best for the holidays? Locally owned and operated, Thinker Toys has been the first holiday shopping stop for generations of parents in Carmel and Monterey, where owner Mark Phillips and his staff take great pride in personally serving every customer. Thinker Toys is dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly. While Thinker Toys specializes in educational toys for newborns through six-year-olds, there's no better place than Thinker Toys to buy great toys for thinking kids of all ages. Make your child's Christmas, Hanukkah, Christmaka, Kwanzaa, or the holiday of your choice extra special with high-quality educational toys and games from Thinker Toys. Open every day at 10 a.m. in Carmel at 7th and San Carlos and in Monterey at the Del Monte Center. Drop by Thinker Toys today and tell Mark that Peter B. sent you. Happy holidays from Thinker Toys.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue our conversation with Professor John Dombrink, co-author of the new book, Sin No More. It's about the culture wars. This one's for Fred Thompson, Mr. Law and Order.
Love, love.
Hey, get the word, Fred. As a presidential candidate,
yeah, yeah.
You dare.
It is dead. That's what I said. Let the band wrap a plan, said he'd send him home. But his hope wasn't right, and he should have known.
Yeah, yeah, when you declare for president, you shouldn't act like a wax figure.
There was love in this man. I'm sure all would agree.
Somebody told Fred Thompson that his candidacy was inevitable.
Now, president, that's what I say.
John Dombrink is our guest. As we mentioned, he's a professor of criminology, law, and society at UC Irvine. And with his colleague, Daniel Hilliard, he's published this new book called Sin No More. What's your take on Fred Thompson and why he's gaining absolutely no traction? In fact, he's the candidate whose poll numbers have dropped most sharply in the last month or so.
I do read an awful lot of this material that comes through, and I look at tracking from certain things. I was more interested in 2006, looking, of course, at James Carville's work and Stan Greenberg, looking at kind of the dissection of the congressional districts, and lo and behold, leading up to the election 2006. It's a little fuzzier looking at elections before there are election results, because the polls are either national or they're not. This and that, but the search for the candidate, that, you know, it's almost like Cinderella, you know, going around seeing who will fit. The idea that since it has fit nobody, that the next person out of the chutes would have to be that person, you know, clearly he wasn't going to be that person. But the then I think that, like you say, the religion shoe starts to try to fit on people. We were talking earlier about Mitt Romney's speech and talking a little bit about Huckabee's obvious embrace of this for a, who had been a second-tier candidate, and now they're welcoming him into the kind of first-tier rung. But, you know, Thompson seemed to have struck out on that as well, so I don't understand the logic.
Now,
nor does anybody else.
Let's talk about Mitt Romney, because I was stunned after his speech. I saw some television coverage, and they trotted out some polls. And a national poll showed that 51% responded that they don't think America is ready to elect a Mormon as president. And in the same poll, only 27% said they don't think that America is ready to elect an African American, and only 24% said that they're not ready to elect a woman. Now, this is stunning to me that Mormon is twice as negative as black or female in today's society.
Well, you know, it's interesting, the being in the sociological field, I mean, we take with a grain of salt a lot of the halo effects upon what people will say to make themselves look as open-minded as possible. We may not know till November 2008 the reality of that with either a female or an African-American candidate. But certainly the case on the Republican side, because, you know, he has to ascend through that party where these things are more salient, has been a rough road. It wasn't all that long ago where Catholics and the Papists were thought to be, you know, such outliers, such enemies. And what's called the co-belligerency, the joining together of Catholics who are pro-life and anti-choice, along with evangelical Protestants, really relatively recent phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Mormons, who, of course, are statistically a pretty small group, they're bigger out here. I've worked in Nevada where they're quite large, and if not dominant, as they are in Utah. Obviously, these are evangelicals, because at the end of the day, I can't believe that most people really care this deeply about that issue.
Yeah, me too. It surprises me. And this was a broad poll of likely voters. It was not limited to the Republican primary or even evangelicals, which, where it might make a little bit more sense.
Right.
Let's go to the phones. Oscar's on the line from Sacramento. We've got lines open for you at 888-5, Peter B., if you'd like to join in. Oscar, welcome, and say hello to Professor John Dombrink.
Thank you, and hello, Professor.
Hey, good afternoon.
Well, I have two basic concerns about the right, the things that have occurred. You know, the fact is you have all these, what I call them as banana Republicans. You know, they'll go off and they'll support all these dictatorships, but they'll let some Cuban terrorists come into this country. And two, all these who are always talking about the Ten Commandments, and they speak about how the abortion is bad, right? It kills. But nobody seems to be concerned about abortion by bombs and bullets. in all these countries that were killing people.
Mm-hmm. Or how about abortion by the use of depleted uranium, which is going to cause birth defects and stillbirths for generations to come in Iraq?
And where's the right on this one here? All the abortions and everything else that are occurring there, you won't see them there. And that's a real conflict a real conflict in this.
Well, you make a great point, Oscar, and we do have these clear, glaring inconsistencies that people who use this carefully researched language about the culture of life can turn a blind eye to what we've done in Iraq and the huge loss of life for very little gain, even if you buy into Bush's arguments about freedom and liberation and remapping the landscape of the Middle East. John?
Yeah, Oscar.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, thank you, Oscar. Go ahead.
Oscar, good question. And it goes back to something Peter was saying earlier about people like Reverend Jim Wallace, who was saying that right out of the gates after 2004, that to find morality somehow as narrowly belonging to this province of these private issues of personal choice and especially sexuality is to miss the so many ways in which moral decisions are made on our behalf all the time. And especially if you do look at some overtly religious leaders, you look at the Catholic bishops, bad on a lot of things, wonderful on things having to do with justice, having to do with immigration. And the people who have tried to draw this garment of life, as they've talked about, into including issues of war and peace, that has been kind of the talk back, I guess, if you will, of the period after 2004. And I think it's actually also reflected in, this is kind of a roundabout address to that, rather than that head on, I think certainly Jim Wallace has said that, and certainly Bill Moyers and people certainly from the United Church of Christ, Reverend Thomas, who's the head of that, and a lot of the liberal religious leaders around the country, progressive leaders. But I also think the Democratic candidates have done their part in moving back to the center to saying that religion can't be the province of people who are ultimately conservative and more interested in the bedroom than in, you know, general public morality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you've seen since 2004, you know, we see that the term abortion gray is thrown around. We use the term purple, you know, when red and blue are depicting polarization. We're not Pollyannish. You know, we don't think everybody gets along, but the idea that, you know, that the shades, and maybe it's a darker purple kind of color, but the idea that within this that there are people who have rejected that narrow interpretation.
Very interesting. We're talking with John Dombrink. Again, he's co-author of the book Sin No More, and lines are open if you'd like to join us at 888-5-PETER-B. Next, I'd like to talk about crime, because that's part of your expertise and your academic background, and you cover some of the issues very well in the book. And I've been on the wrong side of crime issues for a long time, John.
Uh-huh.
I oppose the three strikes law here in California.
Right.
I've always opposed the death penalty. I've advocated for the rights of the accused and for convicted felons here in California, including the life prisoners. There's some 25,000 who were sentenced back in the 1970s who were given the expectation of the possibility of parole, and the prospect is near zero because of the politicization of the process. And so I have been waiting for a long time for the American public to become more rational on crime. And it seems to be a wistful exercise.
Yeah.
Because we see the media whip up people's interest in crimes that have no relevance to my life.
Yeah.
Natalie Holloway is back. Okay?
Right.
Now, that poor girl died in Aruba several years ago, and the Fox News Channel will not let go of the story. There
right.
was some new development there, and they sent Greta Van Susteren down to give us more breathless coverage. We saw the way the Duke lacrosse players were convicted by Nancy Grace on primetime, crime drama television. There are many other cases. We got this cop named Peterson now. I don't even know why I'm so supposed to care.
Uh-huh.
But they keep putting this case on television, and we're supposed to care about Phil Spector and all of these celebrated crimes. But what it really boils down to is that they project fear onto the public,
sure,
who sits there with their remote controls, left with the false choice that the only way to deal with this is more cops, more brutality, including the stuff they show on the Cops TV show, where they always take people down with maximum force, even if they're completely defenseless and throw up their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole package, the way it's delivered to the American public, is that the only reasonable, rational thing to do is build more prisons, lock more people up, and provide more guns,
right,
so that the next time Virginia Tech gets invaded, the students will be packing and be able to shoot the shooter.
The in the hallways where I teach, and I'm in a department of about 20, and you wouldn't expect the other 19 to do what I do. I'm kind of in an area that looks at the borderland of the criminal law, changes in the criminal law over time. But the woman in the office next to me, Joan Petersilli, is on assignment more or less up in Sacramento working with the governor, because in addition to what I think you've described as a very America-wide phenomenon, California itself has, of course, a correction system that is, you know, shameful in its inefficiency and its locking people up over a number of years. And so they're trying to just simply sort out how we can ever get people to not keep coming back. There's a title of a paper I heard 20 years ago on Don't Stay Long, But Come Back and See Us, you know, the revolving door. Back in a time when we were beginning to stop caring about rehabilitating, offering people jobs, offering kids education, the kind of things that keep people from crime. On the other side of the hallway for me, Elliot Curry, who is a wonderful writer, nominated for a Pulitzer Prize some years back for a book, Crime and Punishment in America, has been a very articulate voice on the issues of how, over time, he has a wonderful 1985 book, which questioned the whole rise up of this thought and so forth. And, you know, I think the Europeans look askance at us when we go to meetings, you know, wondering what is in the water in America. How can politicians just basically be able to rev this stuff up without worrying about being attacked from the other side? And each year I'd like to say that I'm more optimistic that things will get better, but it as a national issue, you know, you throw it into the pile, I'm sure people will run to the strongest possible crime. People believe that you can't be too hard on crime.
Right.
And, you know, in some ways, you know, I would hope that in the state levels, where the costs are and where some of the reality are, the people will. But, yeah, in the same way that George Lakoff in Berkeley talks about the framing of issues that were so strong for the social conservatives in the area of, mm-hmm, anti-gay or anti-choice, or, you know, you take the late-term abortion issue packaged, even though it's 0.1% of the abortions done in this country.
Well, and now there is this new lowest life form on television that combines voyeurism and vigilantism. And it's this guy, Chris Hansen, To Catch a Predator.
I don't know him. Is he Dateline?
Yeah, it's Dateline.
Okay.
And MSNBC reruns these shows where they entrap these you know, hapless dudes who think that they're going to meet a girl online for sex. And the premise is that the decoy who first contacted them says that she's under 15. Yeah. And so they entrap these guys, embarrass them. It's this public morality play. You talk a lot about that in your book, about,
sure,
the way, you know, these morality-type dramas are played out in public. And this, again, is predatory in its own way.
Right.
And people don't pay attention to that issue and simply focus on the evil guy, the evil sexual predator that they have entrapped here. And it's not journalism. It's bad television. And it's a really bad example for law enforcement in this country. But it's one of the top-rated salacious shows that,
yeah,
MSNBC runs. We got to take a break. More with John Dombrich in just a moment. And you can call into a 888-5 Peter B. 12 minutes in front of the hour, you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA.
Ah!
going to start off with a problem working. Looks like CHP is telling us that we do have one problem to report, and it looks like it's in Salinas. It's Passante Road at Sam Hill Way. This is an injury crash. It appears the vehicle collided into a wall, and the CHP is on scene. Now, besides that situation, no other problems report in Monterey, Salinas, or Santa Cruz at this point. I'm going to mention that we do have a big event at the HP Pavilion tonight. 7:30, it's the Walking with the Dinosaurs show, and that's going to be quite an experience for people that are heading there this afternoon. And a quick look at southbound 1 between Monterey and Carmel. Traffic looking pretty good at this point. Well, sometimes the perfect gift can bring you joy. Treat yourself to the Range Rover and experience the ultimate luxury with a test drive at your Bay Area Land Rover Center today or bayarea.landrover.com. That is traffic on KRXA.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, brought to you in part by the Organic Wine Company. Log on to ecowine.com or call 888-ECO-WINE. You eat a lot of organic food. Why not wash it down with organic wine? Our music of the moment by Golden Earring from Holland. That's called Twilight Zone. And am I the only American who feels like I'm in the Twilight Zone? I see these debates, particularly on CNN, where they trot out the subject of immigration for the purpose of creating controversy and dividing Americans. And it's not the most important issue, according to the polls. It ranks like number 7 with likely Republican voters, and it's even lower ranked by most Democrats. But it is a very powerful issue that is a wedge on both Democratic and Republican candidates. It's very dicey. Gary, John Dombrich is with us. His new book is called Sin No More. And, John, how do you look at the way this immigration issue is being used? We have serious problems. They are complex in nature, but Tom Tancredo and people like that reduce it to a very low formula which embraces hate, whether it's intentional or not.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. As we were talking before, one of the people who I like enormously in my field, relied upon here in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Times, Ron Brownstein, a regular political columnist, written a wonderful book now called The Second Civil War, in which he talks about the polarization of the Bush years. And one of the things, and other people who've talked about polarization talk about it as it's not a two-way street. The returns were on the Republicans who ginned up this polarization. Karl Rove certainly saw the returns on it. That ties into all these culture war issues. And one of the things he said is, by virtue of that, you change to where political scientist Morris Fiorina shows that, you know, Democrats vote the way Democrats do, Republicans, Republicans. And there's very few people like in the old days in the Senate or the House who were kind of out of step with their party philosophy. And immigration's one of those issues, Social Security, number of them, they really cry out for bipartisan deep thinking. And when they become something other than that, you know, it's terrible. I was out talking to a group of mostly Latino 16-year-olds with a program I run last week, and they were debating about the DREAM Act and pro and con. They were kind of arbitrarily forced into being on either sides, and they were doing wonderful. And one of the things I said is, you know, I can't promise you that 2008 won't take this issue and make it so ugly that you won't want to look at it. I do think in your lifetime, I would hope that people get their heads around it, but not in the short term. It's ugly.
One of the other issues that you take on in detail in your book, Sin No More, is about the whole controversy over stem cell research.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you feel that the recent breakthrough that permits the generation of stem cells that can be used for healing and other kinds of health repair, that these can now be derived from ordinary skin cells instead of the embryonic cells that
right.
Have been in the research to date. Now, the scientists say they want to continue with the embryonic because that is the purest way to
yes.
find stem cells, but that there may be a route through other ordinary cells. I've heard this about olfactory cells as well.
Uh-huh.
Is this going to defuse the phony morality debate that Bush has injected into the stem cell issues?
Well, you know, one of the things, Peter, that when the controversy over stem cells was remarkable about to me, and you were referencing earlier the states who had the Defense of Marriage Act and so forth, you know, that has been a red meat issue, whether it's run its day or not. But what we found remarkable and what we write about in our Chapter 6 is we pose this stem cell issue, which most people wouldn't have accompanied in this kind of combination of topics, but those people who were waging the culture war had always yoked these things together. They had said abortion, same-sex marriage, assisted suicide, and stem cells / cloning. Those are the non-negotiables. They belong together. But what was remarkable we found is in some ways that the non-controversy that so many people said, well, of course, cures Trump any issue about whether that blastocyst has anything to do with human life and the protection of human life. We started our Chapter 6 in a way which I was very happy to be able to do, talking about the victory in Missouri on a close vote in 2006,
mm-hmm.
Because to say that California has funded stem cell research is to say, well, in a blue state, the people that live there have done this, but Missouri, a battleground state, a bellwether state, a purple state, a pretty reliably blue state, red state in recent years, nonetheless, that state saw the idea of cures trumping this narrow interpretation. And
also the right overplayed its hand in the attacks on Michael J. Fox. It reminded too many people of the Terry Schiavo episode.
Right.
And I think it undermined their appeal.
Right. In the you know, one of the things, I don't know, the set pieces in that chapter or maybe in the conclusion, I forget where it ended up, Dan did some wonderful work talking to people over there and so forth. But this, I was listening and I got a tape and so forth when Rush Limbaugh goes after Michael J. Fox, saying
yeah.
that, of course, he's an actor and he's acting in this ad in which he's off his Parkinson's and bouncing all around the screen. And it was one of those moments, and if I were given a slideshow talk on this and only using pictures, that the pictures of the two of them up there, what a story that, you know, it's really an attack on the decency in a lot of ways. And I think that was the overreach, exactly. And Schiavo, I shouldn't get away without saying that, you know, if there was a single event in this time period we looked at, 2004-2007,
right,
that characterized the overreach, it was that moment soon after the 2004 election.
I got to stop there, John. I'm sorry, we're out of time. John Dombrink from the University of California at Irvine, together with Daniel Hilliard, co-authored Sin No More. It's out from New York University Press. Delighted to talk with you, John. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Get the podcast at peterbcollins.com. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, explain the value of wines made from organic grapes.
You know, I think that drinking organic wines is what Tony Robbins described as a class one experience. Wines made with organic grapes feel good. They taste extremely good. Just like an organic tomato or strawberry tastes usually better than a conventional counterpart. They are good. There's plenty of scientific evidence about the health benefits of drinking wine in moderation. Drinking organic wines also is good for other people in that you know you're supporting farmers. And last but not least, it's definitely good then for the higher good.
The Organic Wine Company. Log on to ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Two arrests made in the killings of six people in a home in rural Washington.
The two suspects apparently showed up on scene after deputies were already here when they initially got that 911 call from a concerned co-worker from one of the victims who didn't show up to work today. There were two of many people in the neighborhood who were questioned.
KIRO reporter Aaron Covey on the scene in Car Nation. It's about 20 miles east of Seattle.
We do not know the relationship between this man and woman or the relationship between the suspects and the victims. But we are told that the victims knew this man and woman.
Among the dead, what are believed to be three generations of one family, including a young boy and a young girl. Two remain hospitalized in San Francisco, where the zoo remains closed. Investigators seeking answers to yesterday's attack by an escaped tiger. A visitor killed by the tiger killed by police. CBS's Manuel Gallegos.
They still don't know how this tiger may have been able to get out of its enclosed area. So the San Francisco police chief says that she basically considers this area a crime scene because they don't know if there was any human involvement. So they're looking at it as a criminal case, potentially, and that's where it stands.
A hunting we will go.
Oh!
With Republican presidential hopeful Mike Huckabee.
Nice shot, guys. Is that the governor's bird? Yes.
The former governor of Arkansas bagging a pheasant in Iowa today, where he hopes to bag the GOP caucuses.
It's worth running for president and participating in the Iowa caucuses because you get to go pheasant hunting a couple of times. Because it'll make up for everything else.
The New Hampshire primary comes next. That's where Mitt Romney is campaigning.
I spent my life tackling big problems, whether it's in the world of business or in the Olympics or in the state of Massachusetts. I've been able to help make a turnaround and bring change. And I intend to bring change to Washington.
In Washington today, we bring you the entire session of the U.S. Senate today, gavel to gavel.
The Senate will come to order. Under the previous order, the Senate stands in recess until Friday, December 28th, 2007, at 10 a.m.
That's it. Virginia Senator Jim Webb addressing a chamber empty of any other senators, the Democratic-controlled Senate holding what are called pro forma sessions. Technicality keeps President Bush from appointing officials without Senate confirmation. 'Twas the day after opening those gifts, the day to return what you don't like or doesn't fit.
Taking into consideration all the gifts under the tree, this shopper says most everything fit.
We're just exchanging one of my sweatshirts I got. We're getting a larger size. I didn't want to shrink it and have a brand new sweatshirt I couldn't wear.
One return out of a dozen presents isn't bad.
Yeah, really lucky. Sometimes you have to bring more stuff back.
And for sure, there's one gift that isn't going back.
I kept my iPod.
Stephen Kaufman, CBS News, Spokane Valley, Washington.
This is CBS News.
If Alex's brother hadn't signed him up at Match.com, he wouldn't be cuddling on the couch with the gorgeous Missy, watching a nature documentary about pelicans.
Fly, pelican, fly!
In fact, if Alex's brother hadn't signed him up at Match.com, Alex and Missy would be perfect strangers.
Who are you? And why is my arm around your shoulder?
How did you know I liked pelicans?
Want to get your friends in the game? Visit Match.com and start matching your friends today. It's a whole new way to make Match.com work.
Reason number 22 to switch to Geico. We think renters are cool. Now, we don't know if you were born cool or if it's just all the cool stuff you have in your apartment. The point is, if you want to protect your considerable coolness, ask Geico about renter's insurance. For as little as $12 a month, you can protect all the stuff you hold near and dear, including that combination flat-screen TV espresso machine. Now that is cool.
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
2007, the year that the bottom fell out of the housing market. CBS's Sam Litzinger looking back and looking ahead.
The most recent numbers are for prices in October, and they're down for the 10th month in a row. In fact, they were down that month by the largest amount since 1991, a fall of 6.7%.
There's nothing here that says, aha, we're at the bottom. There's everything that suggests the decline, unfortunately, has a little bit further to go.
David Blitzer's an analyst at Standard & Poor's.
Housing generally has a seasonal pickup in the second quarter, April, May, and June. I think 2008 will follow that pattern, and maybe that will give a little impetus to an eventual turn in the results.
Lots of homeowners will be watching and waiting. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
United Airlines shifting flight crews, trying to get around cancellations, still dealing with that weekend winter storm day after United canceled more than 300 flights. The carrier canceling fewer than half that many today. Pilots Union blames United for not having enough pilots. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Happy Honda Days!
Can I help you guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're having a tough time deciding between these Honda trucks.
Okay.
Well, what do you recommend that has lots of room and can handle the North Pole?
Well, the Pilot is available with four-wheel drive and has seating for eight.
Oh, that sounds perfect.
Make this a season to remember. Think Honda for the holidays.
All right, then. We'll take the Pilot.
Wonderful. Will you gentlemen be joint owners?
Oh, no. It's a gift for the big guy. Yeah, we make wonderful toys, but our cars stink.
I see.
Happy Honda Days ends January 2nd.
Reason number 9 to switch to Geico. There's nothing sweeter than saving money on car insurance. It's one of those rare opportunities in life where you can thumb your nose at the system and say, okay, system, listen up. I just got a better deal with Geico. Great savings, personal service 24/7, and the latest in online technology. Of course, the system may sulk for a day or two, but you're going to feel a lot better.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
One, two, three,
My baby don't mess around because she loves
me. I'd like another slice without the tryptophan, please. I'm still a little sleepy. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show this Monday. Good to have you listening. And I want to welcome the fine folks tuned in to Green 960 KKGN in San Francisco. Good to have you with us today. In a moment, we'll be joined by Professor David Coates. He's got a liberal toolkit to help you respond to those wacky conservative arguments. And I definitely want you to be listening an hour from now when Mark Klein will join us. He is the American citizen who blew the whistle on the NSA wiretap program right here in San Francisco. And we've been chasing him for 3 weeks now. We're delighted he'll be with us. And he's got quite a story to tell. And before we get going this hour, I just need to make a little explanation. Last Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, Green 960 in San Francisco made plans to carry the best of the Peter B. Collins Show so that John Scott could take the day off. And there was some sort of a glitch in the satellite receiver. And after hearing the announcement that you're about to hear the Peter B. Collins Show, Bill O'Reilly came on. And while I'm not personally responsible for that, it did cause me some indigestion at the Thanksgiving feast. And if that happened to you, too, you have my humble apology.
Excuse me.
Joining me now is, oh, and by the way, John Scott is off today because he's got laryngitis. He lost his voice over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, and hopefully, put a little scotch on that, John. That's what I do. Hopefully, he'll be back with you tomorrow. Professor David Coates is the Worrell Professor of Anglo-American Studies in the Department of Political Science at Wake Forest University. And besides that, he's a good guy who's written a new book called A Liberal Toolkit. David Coates, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you, Peter B. It's very nice to be with you. Always a privilege.
Well, my pleasure, sir. And tell me what caused you to write this book. It's subtitled Progressive Responses to Conservative Arguments.
Well, I wrote it to fill a gap, really, and to create a more level playing field, if I could, at least to help to create a more level playing field ahead of next year's general election. I mean, there are so many conservative arguments out there, and they're very well distributed. There's a huge conservative book club, of course, and lots of conservative television hosts, but there's also a huge amount of talk radio, as you know, the vast majority of which is in conservative hands. And what comes over on that kind of medium is not only a certain line of argument, but also a stridency and an arrogance and a dismissiveness of liberal positions. And I thought I'd like to just make my contribution to pushing the boat back the other way.
Well, we certainly need help in this. One of the problems is that they're a little slippery, and they often play with their own set of facts or with a concocted set of facts. And this has gotten much more pronounced since Bush took office, and the way he has created his own reality, often very distinct from the reality that we see, we often are talking past one another.
Yes, I think we are, and I think people kind of stay in their comfort zones, don't they? So people kind of turn these radio programs on. They're cross-referential, and they don't come outside and talk to anybody else. And lots of the information that they distribute is frankly precarious, I think, to put it as politest. So I think we do.
Well, don't be so polite, would you?
Well, it's very dodgy, I think. It doesn't add up, does it?
No.
And the figures are really cooked in different ways. And the framing of these issues is so important. To particularly independent voters, I think, they need to have a sense of what they're getting is accurate and reliable and nonpartisan. And
well,
there's a lot of that stuff out there. It just has to be put together in one place, and that's part of what the Liberal Toolkit tries to do.
Yeah. I'm glad you referenced framing. George Lakoff has written several interesting books over the last few years and has helped, I think, progressives think about language and framing. And, David Coates, one of the things that just drives me to distraction is the way the Democratic leaders in this country routinely use the framing, if not the specific language, of the people out of the White House and the administration. In particular, this whole phrase about protecting the troops and that funding for the occupation of Iraq is made equivalent by the Bush folks to supporting the troops. And so the Democrats feel wedged in there. Well, we can't deny funding for the troops. But, you know, you see them on television, and they're using the same language and the same frames, and they don't push back and say, well, you know, I look at that differently, Jim.
Yeah, there's a lack of confidence in this Democratic campaign, I think, which worries me. I get a sense that the Democratic Party leadership is comfortable enough to frame the health issue, at least this far. So talking very much about the need for major health care reform, but it's been very defensive on the war and is now becoming pathetically defensive on the immigration issue. And those three questions, I think, are going to run and run and run through this campaign. And if, in fact, the Republicans, as they will, see weakness in the Democratic response, then, of course, they'll make them even more central. So it's absolutely vital that we have very powerful arguments to reframe the war issue, to reframe immigration and health care, at least those three.
Well, David, I want to open up the phone lines here and invite listeners to bring in real-world conversations, maybe an argument you had around the proverbial water cooler earlier today. And David will attempt to help you sort through the language, the reasoning, the power of your argument, maybe the data that you bring to support your argument. So feel free to get free advice from the professor this hour. He's with us this entire hour. And my toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. You dial 1-383-573-8372. And I'll repeat that for some new listeners here in San Francisco. 888-573-8372. Now, Professor David Coates, I'd like to give you a real-world example of my own. We saw that at the Philadelphia debate that Senator Clinton was asked a gotcha question by Tim Russert about driver's licenses for undocumented residents of her state of New York. And by all accounts, she fumbled the question, gave answers that appeared to be, covering the waterfront, if you will. And then in the Las Vegas debate, the CNN folks brought those questions back. And it really frustrates me because the driver's license issue is not a federal issue. Nobody who becomes president of the United States can issue a decree or, you know, wave their wand and cause the states to fall into line on driver's licenses, license issues. And so it's a red herring in that respect. And the only one who confidently dealt with the question was Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico. And instead of dancing around whether he would or wouldn't, he said, I did. And he didn't respond to the intimidation that, 73% of the people of New York think that Elliot Spitzer's off base and that Hillary Clinton was wrong. He didn't pander to the majority in the polls on this issue. He simply said, this is my position and this is why I did it.
Well, what's happening, of course, as you know, is that there's a kind of strategy at play to strip illegal immigrants of all their rights and to push them further and further into difficult conditions so that somehow they will find the money to slip back into Mexico. And that completely ignores the fact that even if you do that, you leave the rest of the society extraordinarily vulnerable, people driving around without licenses and insurance, but also you victimize the very people who are actually the victims of the process. I mean, what we've got here are major flows of labor triggered by employment opportunities here,
mm-hmm.
and in part caused, of course, by our own policies in relation to Mexico. What bugs me, I'm sitting in North Carolina as we talk, as you know, and the people here worry. They think that, you know, this arrival of labor from Mexico is taking away jobs from North Carolina. The major thing, of course, that's taking the jobs away from North Carolina are the 150 million Chinese workers who are moving off the Chinese countryside into all those factories that then feed into Walmart. And if we actually want a serious policy in relation to wages and employment, we have to start with trade, not immigration. But by the time you come into a discussion where you're talking about driving licenses, all that has been pushed to one side. And I think the crucial job of all of us is to have a two-stage response. One is to say, yes, in relation to your point, you're wrong. But also, you're framing it in far too narrow a way. And the job of progressives is to link all these issues together into a much bigger picture. It can be done quite simply and quickly, I think. And if any Democratic presidential candidate starts to do it systematically, he or she would certainly have my vote and my passionate enthusiasm, because I think that's what we need.
Well, but they seem to be very uncomfortable, and again, the only one who is an exception, in my view, is Bill Richardson.
Yeah, Richardson, yeah.
But we had Obama. He finally said yes when he was pressed on the question, but he should have said this is not a federal issue, and in Illinois, I believe these three things. And, Wolf, you're asking a question intending to, you know, try to come up with controversy and some sort of sparks in this debate, and we want to talk about the NSA. We want to talk about this ongoing occupation of Iraq. And instead, you're diverting us into this neener-neener kind of debate style.
Okay. And also, we should have said to Wolf, look, let's talk about agricultural subsidies and NAFTA. Let's start talking about why happy Mexican farmers suddenly decide to battle their way across Arizona deserts at the risk of their lives and limbs and leave their family behind to come and do terrible jobs and none of us will do anyway.
And David, let me just jump in here, and I'm sure you can handle this, but let me criticize you.
Okay.
Because you just picked up on the racist message of the anti-immigration forces in this country, the Tom Tancredo types,
right,
who want us to believe that every illegal immigrant in this country came over our southern border.
Yep.
And it's not true.
No, it's not.
Large
true.
Numbers come in from Asia by airplanes, come in from Canada, come in from Europe. And yes, you know, the visible immigration issues are at the southern border. But it's really misleading to always talk about Mexicans when we're talking about immigration issues.
Well, it is. I mean, 40% of the illegal immigrants come from places other than Mexico and come from other than across the border. You're quite right. But, of course, when the thing comes at you from the right, they're actually talking about Mexican immigration, because there's definitely a racist dimension to this, and there's some fear of cultural drowning or bilingualism and so on. And I think we just have to address all those issues head on. You know, ask why are they coming? What have we done to make it possible? What terrible conditions for these people? They've been here so long. Do you think a war will trap them in or keep them out? All those kinds of questions have to be asked.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, as you come away from the Republican right that's driving this and look at most of the surveys of the sane center of American politics, most people hold two completely compatible positions. One is they do want to see the border secure, but they also want to find a route to legal citizenship for the millions and millions of hardworking people who've come here illegally.
We're going to take a break and return with Professor David Coates from Wake Forest. His new book is Liberal Toolkit, Progressive Responses to Conservative Arguments. If you've lost an argument recently to a conservative, replay it for us over the telephone and we'll try to give you some help. 888-5-PETER-B, that's our toll-free number, 888-573-8372. Thanks for joining us today on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Our radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540, KRXA, 6 a.m. weekdays.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Pam and Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos on the Christmas season.
We have the tree, we have refreshments. It's turned out to be a really big season for us.
Someone was in the other day who was telling their companion who had been there for the first time that, oh, and they also do Christmas and you should see it with all the lights. It's just beautiful. So.
It's one of the prettiest times of the year.
Yeah. Christmas is fun. I mean, we start a kickoff with the, for the season, the first weekend in November with an open house and we have homemade refreshments. In December we have a live green wreath workshop where people can come and make their own green wreaths.
Call us at 685-1626 and we keep lists of anyone who's interested in the classes and schedule them accordingly. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn. If you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find. The Potting Shed.
Gifts for gardeners and everyone. We're hard to find, but it's worth it.
Looking at traffic on KRXA on this Wednesday evening, the day after Christmas, hump day already. And we're looking at just a couple of problems. One in Coralitos, it's Pleasant Valley at Hames. SUV went off the roadway, landed into a ditch, and CHP is already on scene. Other than that, Salinas, northbound 101 at Main Street, heads up for the, well, it's a wooden pallet in the right lane. Slow traffic being reported. Between southbound 1 between Monterey and Carmel, just slow and go at this point. And then we're also going to mention eastbound 25 slows out of Gilroy into It looks like Hollister. This report brought to you by Vicks DayQuil. Cold or no cold, the day must go on. So for help you need to power through your day, get the non-drowsy multi-symptom relief of Vicks DayQuil. Use as directed. And that is a look at traffic here on KRXA.
The Thanksgiving dinner table. Your conservative uncle took you on over a Bush issue. You want to talk about it? I've got a line open for you at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And we go to Red in Sacramento. Thanks for calling, Red. You're on the air.
Hello, Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, there you go again. I hate that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I hate it, too.
Well, we'll train you eventually.
But you did it.
Yes, I did.
Anyway, listen, I was really glad to hear Professor Coates mention in the immigration problem this thing that reframing brings out new ways of looking at something. But I would mention that it not only brings new ways of addressing arguments, it also opens the way to a whole new way of finding solutions and novel solutions. And I'll give you an example of my own on this.
Great.
The immigration problem has always been framed, and I've heard this in both very liberal and very conservative circles, as either an enforcement problem or an economic labor issue. I don't know, I would guess that 99% of your calls fall into one of those two categories. Am I right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Or in other words, it's a matter of criminalization or jobs that concern people. But when I reframed it by asking the question, why do people come here? And I knew it wasn't just economic, and I knew because people don't pick up and leave their culture, you know, in desperate circumstances, unless there's no other option for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I came up with when I reframed it that way was a solution I've never heard called, that I call, repatriation schools. And that solution envisions a number of community college-like or vocational school-like schools put on the border so that people who were tracked for deportation got an option. They could be deported and go through the legal process, which is very expensive, very time-consuming, and be incarcerated and treated to all the indignities. Or they could go to this school for a year or two to be given skill sets that would, vocational and personal skill sets, that might maximize their chances to have success in their home community.
All right, this is an interesting idea, Red.
Also,
hold on, my time is limited, so let me get Professor Coates to give us a comment.
Just one more thing. They would also be given skill sets in organizing and being activists, so that when we sent them home, they would have ways to make changes in their home communities to change the circumstances.
Okay, I got you. I got you. Red,
the home community.
Red, come on. I don't have time to go all day, so please be polite. Go ahead, Professor.
Well, yeah, I see the logic of that one, but actually I think the problem is a little deeper and the solution's in one sense easier. I mean, two-thirds of everybody here who's illegal coming across the southern border has come since NAFTA was signed in 1994. I mean, if we were to address the issue of agricultural subsidies in the U.S. Economy and the amount of money now being handed over by Congress, taxpayers' money, to large farmers in the Midwest, then sending their products south, who would find a situation in which the Mexican farmers would have the space again to reconstitute their basic corn production? I think there's, you know, before we start thinking about how we
deal with the agents who are caught up in this flow,
mm-hmm.
we've got to think about the structures that are putting them into flow in the first place. And we are much more the architects of this flow of immigration in from the south than politicians care to admit. And it could be taken out reasonably quickly. If we take the wall away and set up a guest worker program, then that natural rhythm that was there before of agricultural labor coming north for a while and then going south again would recreate itself.
Red,
and don't you think one of the ways of doing that is to change conditions in the home country?
Red, I'd love to pursue this further, but the clock has run. Thank you for your call today. Professor Coates, stay with us. We got more callers for you right after the break. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show. Visit my website at peterbcollins.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
At Homescapes Carmel, we search far and near to find the best locally made, American made, and imported furnishings the world has to offer. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I scour the globe to find unique, unusual, and unmatched merchandise to help you personalize your home and garden. We're proud to offer a variety of products such as cabinets, lamps, and vases made with bamboo, plantation teak, and other renewable and reclaimed resources. These items are beautiful, durable, and most of all, eco-friendly. So stop by Homescapes Carmel on the corner of 7th and Dolores, or visit homescapescarmel.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. Hey, hey, we're Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news.
So how do you win an argument with a Republican these days, huh?
People say we act like clowns.
Professor David Coates from Wake Forest is our guest. He's published a liberal toolkit subtitled Progressive Responses to Conservative Arguments. And there's a lot of detail in here about Social Security, about health care reform, the war in Iraq. And David goes through some of the common arguments that you hear and some suggested liberal responses. Have you road tested and focus grouped this stuff, David?
Yeah, I tried it here in the Carolinas a lot. It's a rather specialized audience out here. Not as many liberals as there are with you, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough territory. And I mean, the arguments and the conservative arguments are quite strong. So they've got to be taken out in a very systematic way. But we've been trying it, and people seem to feel a need for it. I mean, there's so much glibness and cliché-ridden conversation, particularly on the television, that people seem to be hungry for a slightly quieter and calmer, more relaxed discussion of important things, and the book is part of that.
What do we do when people won't tell the truth about their reasons? And I'm thinking of two recent examples. One is that I believe there are a lot of people, particularly in southern states, who would not tell a pollster, I can never vote for Barack Obama because he's not white. And also in the recent dust-up over SCHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, it's believed that a lot of the people who voted against it didn't like the tobacco tax as the funding mechanism, and yet they wouldn't say that that was the reason they voted against it. So how do we deal with things that are kept below the radar?
Well, I think there's only a limited amount of progress we can make there. I mean, my sense is that those people are themselves a minority. There is a huge tranche of middle America that's available for progressive politics if it's properly presented to them. And those are the people we should direct our attention to. We spend way too much time, and I'm not you personally, but I think the Democrat leadership do, being fearful of people who would never vote for them if hell froze over twice. And I think we just got to recognize that there are these diehard conservatives, and we shouldn't let them drive the ship. Now, they've been a very powerful force inside the Republican Party. You watch this primary campaign going on now, and Rudy Giuliani trying to persuade everybody he was always hostile to immigration and so on. I mean, those people are beyond our capture, but they are a minority, and there's an awful lot of decent Americans out there looking for a different kind of leadership, I think.
All right. Let's go to John in Carmel Valley. You're next, John. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Did either you or your guest get a chance to hear the debate? It wasn't intended to be a debate, but Ed Schultz had Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the congresswoman from South Florida, on his show. And I heard it several times in the reruns during the weekend, and she is the voice box for the Pelosi mentality. She actually told Ed Schultz that all the polls she's seen indicate that impeachment in the public mind isn't even in the top five of their wants right now. So my question essentially is, if you didn't hear that...
I did hear it.
Okay, well, what did you think, Peter?
Well, I was really proud of Ed Schultz.
Yeah, I loved him for once as an interviewer. He's usually too mild with his guests, but this time, you know what? You noticed, didn't you, that he cut her off. He could have had the interview go on. She was game for more, but he just couldn't stand her intransigence.
Well, I also thought she was patronizing, because in trying to deflect the calls for impeachment, she and other Democrats have insulted us by saying that, oh, they're so hard at work on other priorities, and, you know, would suck all the oxygen out of the Congress. They wouldn't be able to do anything. I mean, all that stuff is untrue, and the Democrats have frittered away the time there was to pursue it, so that now, you know, the reality's actually caught up with their public comments, that there probably isn't enough time to do an effective job and achieve even a partial outcome of, say, removing Dick Cheney.
So how do you explain her mentality and Pelosi's? And on top of that, we've got two other big problem children in the women's politician department there. That's Hillary Clinton and Dianne Feinstein. Who would ever have guessed that women would turn into these headlights for idiocy?
I'm going to turn to the professor on this one.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's lovely. I mean, my sense, I didn't hear it, the actual interview, I did not hear. But my own private fear, probably one I share with many others, is that Dick Cheney will have one last throw before this administration is through. That he is the single most dangerous person in the present administration, so anything that would keep him locked in his kennel is entirely in the interest of global peace and climate change and anything else we care to think of as important. And the real danger is that they will use their last year to create a scenario around any incoming new administration focused on Iran and Pakistan that will actually make the Iraq war look like a picnic in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And I think impeaching Cheney as fast as possible will be one way of stopping that process.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. But she didn't see that. She couldn't see that to save her life right now.
Right.
I mean, talk about a politician. Well, Ed Schultz said, see what happens when you get in the Beltway?
Yeah.
It was right after she got off. She should have been told that to her face.
All right, John, thank you very much. Now to Dave in Eureka. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Peter and Professor. I'm of the belief that however resistive, however programmed, and however difficult it is, the fact that the right wing is coming from a total fraud, everything about it is packaged dishonesty, I believe that needs to be surfaced and exposed. And I have one other thought, but if you have a comment on that, I'd appreciate it.
All right, go ahead, Professor.
Well, certainly on the dishonesty thing, I think we've got to explore it all the time. I mean, the Republican Party is getting away with the claim that they're the party of family values. And their own private practices are part, which are significantly destructive of many families. I mean, their programs actually make it more and more difficult for families to hang together successfully. And I think actually we've got to move from the dishonesty and the kind of pretense Republican politics into a hard argument about what kind of programs will actually look after hard-working American families, and they're certainly not going to come from the Republican Party.
Well, my other thought is a little off-subject, but I wanted to get it said, and that is this Wednesday, 10 o'clock, at the military recruitment offices here in Eureka, everybody that cares should show up there with a sign and let them know what you feel.
All right, Dave, thanks, and I'll see you Friday at the Eureka Theater.
You will indeed.
That's right. We'll be live from Eureka this Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Come on over to the Eureka Theater. We'll see you there, and Roy Zimmerman will play live after our live broadcast. Now to Patrick in San Francisco, listening to Green 960. Welcome, Patrick.
Thank you, Peter. It's always such a treat to hear you. And, Professor, I have a question. I'm an orange-wearing, card-carrying Democrat Club member, die-hard good little liberal, and I have a number of liberal friends. And part of the problem, both myself and my two roommates, we live in Nancy Pelosi's district. And I wonder if you've had any experience in being able to convince the comment that always stymies me is when they say it wouldn't do any good, phone calls, emails wouldn't do any good, or this, that, or the other wouldn't do any good. Look at what they did with FISA. Look at what they've done with the funding. She's still saying impeachment is off the table. So do you have a trick that can make the progressive voice more powerful?
We're demanding a lot from Professor Coates today.
I would just, my own first reaction to that, Patrick, would be to take my eye off the immediate issue into the longer term. I mean, we have just got to make sure, haven't we, that when this next election is over, the Christian right are not back in control of Washington again. They're not in the Justice Department. That, in fact, our people, however much we are a very broad church, it's our kind of people that are in town rather than their kind of people. Now, that, you know, we have to live with some fairly
tricky allies, don't we, in that process. He was way too conservative from my point of view. But if we end up with the center of gravity on the center left rather than the center right, then we can start to push for more radical policies in the second wave, I think. And so for the minute, you know, I don't see her, of course. I don't get as distressed with the local activities of Nancy Pelosi as much as you do, because I am surrounded, you know, in Carolina with a highly conservative Republican establishment.
Well, and you've got Heath Shuler in the Democratic
Party.
Shuler,
you know.
Yeah.
I mean, is he a Democrat? I mean, you know, he's very populist on some issues. He's appalling on immigration and so on.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we've just got to, what we need is to have party discipline enough to put our people into command positions in the committees and to get somebody in the White House who will bring into town a different, more attractive team. I have very few illusions about how radical the difference will be, but it will be
significant. My feeling is that there are a number of people, you know, and taking Nancy Pelosi's district as an example, the street commentary that you get is that all of her constituents are dissatisfied with her lack of progressive ideals. And so how do we get the party to understand that we're far more progressive in our entire total across the country than they think we are?
Patrick, even Jack Murtha, who is the king of the earmarks, all right, one of the top recipients of defense contractor contributions, who, to his credit, you know, has tried to get us out of Iraq. John Murtha said 2 years ago that the public is ahead of the leaders on these issues. And if he can see that, then why is it lost on others?
Well, I think they've got way too many focus groups and they've got way too many pollster consultants, haven't they? I mean, the party activists are clearly way to the left of the leadership. Center of gravity of the electorate in different areas is significantly to the left of the leadership. Mm-hmm. But in the marginal areas that they want to pick up, then probably the gaps are not so great, but I would have thought it precisely in those areas that principled, clear distancing ourselves on the Republicans will pull people over, and then when we're in power, the force of the base can start to kick in again. Because after all, that's what the Republicans do. They put their people in, and then when a Trent Lott or somebody decides to go soft on immigration, all hell breaks loose around him, and he's told to back off and eventually decides not even to stay in the job. And I think that sort of disciplining of our representatives when they're in Washington is something else that we on the left don't do half well enough.
Patrick, thank you for your call today.
Thank you, Peter.
Great to hear from you. Now, David, a moment ago you made a reference to discipline. Are we dreaming to imagine that the Democrats will ever have the kind of party discipline and response to, say, the Speaker that we saw under Republican majorities?
Well, we've seen it twice before, I think, in this century, haven't we? We saw it in the 1930s on the clear principle of leadership, and until Vietnam took Lyndon Johnson out, we saw it again in the war on poverty. It can be done. It's a difficult alliance altogether because the racism that divides white and black America stretches down into the Democratic coalition as well. But if we come in with very strong leadership on very clear issues, particularly issues that matter to lots of people, healthcare would be one, I think, you know, and the getting out of Iraq would be another, then I think we do have the capacity to do that. I'm just struck by the fact that, for the minute, you know, the parties, the Democratic Party, is running this election campaign like it's running American Idol. You know, I mean, it's looking for the most beautiful candidate, and it's not talking hard and strong enough about the kinds of policies that would defeat the Republicans in the general election that must follow. And that's what we need to get to. Let's get this primary system over as fast as we can and get to some disciplined party policy positions that we can go and campaign on.
We're going to take a break and return. I see Linda on the line. Stay there, Linda, in Sacramento. We'll get to you right after the break. And if you have a question or a real-life example of an argument that you may have lost to a conservative, give us a call now. Toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 1-888-573-8372. We're talking with Wake Forest University Professor of Political Science David Coates. His new book, A Liberal Toolkit. More in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Looking at traffic on KRXA on this Wednesday evening, the day after Christmas, hump day already. And we're looking at just a couple of problems. One in Coronado.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself.
SUV went off the roadway, landed into a ditch.
AM 540 KRXA.
Other than that, Salinas northbound 101 Main Street heads up for the, well, it's a wooden pallet. in the right lane. Slow traffic being reported between southbound 1 between Monterey and Carmel. Just slow and go at this point. And then we're also going to mention eastbound 25 slows out of Gilroy into, it looks like, Hollister. This report brought to you by Vicks DayQuil. Cold or no cold, the day must go on. So for help you need to power through your day, get the non-drowsy multi-symptom relief of Vicks DayQuil. Use as directed. And that is a look at traffic here on KRXA.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's A Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
Welcome to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at noon on KRXA 540 AM. Your Solar Future is about the practical, the passion, and the politics of going solar. Listen to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at high noon. Go to YourSolarFuture.com. See the solar videos sent in by folks like you. Save thousands of dollars. Make money as well. You'll see when you go to YourSolarFuture.com.
This is an important message from Brian McGuff, Iraq War veteran and Purple Heart recipient.
More and more troops and veterans of Iraq believe George Bush's military policy has been a disaster. I am one of them. Rush Limbaugh called vets like me phony soldiers for telling the truth about Iraq.
The Rush Limbaugh Show, September 26th.
Welcome to the EIB Network. Hello.
Hi, Rush. Thanks for taking my call. They never talk to real soldiers. They like to pull these soldiers to come up out of the blue and stop the media.
The phony soldiers.
The phony soldiers.
Rush, the shrapnel I took to my head was real. My traumatic brain injury was real. My belief that we are on the wrong course in Iraq is real. And so you have the guts to call me a phony soldier in my face. Stop telling lies about my service.
Tell Rush Limbaugh to stop insulting America's troops and veterans. Call 800-282-2882. Paid for by Vote Vets Action Fund.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host,
from
Peter B.
Heavens, it was easy to tell. It was love from above that could save me from hell. Shed fire in a soul, it was easy to see how the devil himself could be pulled out of me. There were drums in the
coming up next hour. Looking forward to talking with Mark Klein. Used to work for AT&T. He blew the whistle on the NSA wiretap program. It's often referred to as warrantless wiretapping, and I cut through the euphemism. It was illegal wiretapping. That's a new one from Carlos Santana. Some great guitar work there, and Chad Kroeger is singing lead on that particular tune. We're talking with Professor David Coates at Wake Forest. His new book is A Liberal Toolkit, and Linda's on the line from Sacramento. Thanks for holding, Linda. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. I would like to speak to something that's not progressive and not neocon idea. What I want is more humanity, and it is about the Mexicans coming across the border. When NAFTA came in, my husband and mother-in-law, who my mother-in-law is from Guadalajara, said, "Boy, that stinks," before it even went into effect. And now what I've learned somewhere is like, you know, we have the big Midwest filled with corn. You know, it's like one type of corn, a lot of popcorn and stuff like that. But in Mexico, there were farmers, I think in southwest Mexico that had, southeast for centuries, you know, their farms. And they have more different kinds of corn that they grow from different little area to different area that are like the, you know, the Eskimos have names for snow like 150 or 200. Well, these Mexican farmers were growing their corn happily and they were making livings. And now a lot of these guys have lost their farms. because of their contact with, well, God knows, maybe genetically engineered corn or something might ruin their corn, but they, a lot of them do come to Los Estados Unidos because it's a place to come and make a living because they have lost their family farms. And it sounded like a good idea because I used to get really neat stuff from Mexico, like ponchos and things when NAFTA first developed. And then like the Chinese crochet, little cottage industry rosettes and, you know, things, arty things that you couldn't get anywhere else.
Okay. Linda, let me get a comment from Professor Coates. Go ahead, David.
Well, two things I would say about Linda, both very supportive, I think. I mean, one is I don't know any example in human history of happy farmers emigrating. And so much unhappiness in the Mexican countryside has been created since 1994. I mean, my figures would suggest that corn prices in Mexico dropped 70% since NAFTA came in.
Yes.
And that, you know, the subsidy to corn producers in the American Midwest is something like 10 times the size of the entire Mexican agricultural budget.
Yes.
So this is not a level playing field. If we take the subsidies away, then maybe we'll get a proliferation of corn again, and people wouldn't need to leave their farms.
I don't know, but it cuts back on it cuts into our human experience, our cultural experiences, the richness of our lives, and things will become extinct that shouldn't become extinct. And I know, this is probably more a green issue, but we've done this all around the world, and.
Well, we shouldn't apologize for green issues, should we? I mean, the Republican Party is supposed to be opposed to subsidies to industry, but the agricultural sector in the United States, big farm, subsidy.
Well,
Linda, thanks for a thoughtful call. I want to jump to another one before we run out of time here. It's Jack in San Francisco. Welcome, Jack. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you, Peter. My comment was that I agree that the base of the Democratic Party is way to the left of the leadership. The leadership has completely lost its New Deal roots. And I think what needs to happen is the base of the party needs to leave the Democratic Party, hook up with what's left of labor, and form a new party that actually has the values that we used to think of as belonging to the Democratic Party.
All right, Professor, your reaction?
Yeah, it's always a dilemma, isn't it? Till we split and break and go away and make a third party, and we saw the NADA problem, you know, in 2000. I mean, if there was no qualitative difference between the candidates, then that would make perfect sense. It did to NADA in 2000. But I can't believe that looking at Obama or Edwards, possibly even Clinton, that actually the kind of team they'll bring into Washington isn't worth having this time relative to the lot that will turn up from any of those Republicans. So I'm not a splitter, I'm afraid. I'm still in there. Hoping that we can get a Democratic administration that I can at least live with.
Well, Jack,
Nader is not analogous to what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting is something more akin to what happened to the Whigs in the 1850s.
Mm-hmm.
They split over slavery, and a new party was formed, and the Whigs disappeared.
Well, Jack, I understand your thought. There are a lot of impediments to the development of a real powerful third party in this country, and those impediments have been put in place by the two parties that control it now. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it is a daunting task, and even Ross Perot, with his billions, was unable to win a single electoral vote in either 1992 or 1996.
Yeah, but other third-party candidates have, and I'm suggesting they formed their own brand-new parties, and that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about taking the Democratic Party, that is the base of the party, which is the party, actually, and having them join up with labor and just tell the leaders of the current party, we're going someplace else. You guys can keep the name in the office.
And Jack, there have been recent efforts over the last 10 or 15 years to form a labor party in this country. They've had conventions. They've tried to put it together. So I don't dismiss the notion. I just think we're all in agreement here that it's not easy and it wouldn't necessarily produce immediate benefits.
Can I add just one thing in very quickly?
Sure,
it would be great if we could get some very solid left-wing candidates into the House and into the Senate, but certainly into the House. So where labor is strong locally and where you can get a new coalition together, then taking the Democratic Party over and getting strong left-wing candidates at the congressional level would just be terrific, because there's no point taking the White House and facing the usual riffraff in Congress.
Right.
I mean, we do need some really solid new people there.
I've given similar advice to the Green Party. If they would concentrate on winning a handful of House seats, then they would be a pivotal coalition there.
Would indeed.
Mike in Sacramento, I got about 30 seconds. Your comment, please.
Yeah, Peter. Hey, food for thought. First, I think that you're right on saying that that Tom Tancredo is leading the Republican Party and just another page of the racist playbook of the Southern strategy. And also, the other thing is, I think that the Democratic Party, or at least the people that you've been talking about, are very reluctant to do anything right now because they don't want to tick off the Israeli lobby in the United States, and they're funded heavily by them. And I think that's the reason why.
All right, thank you for your comment. Professor, I want to thank you for the book, Liberal Toolkit. It's out in hardcover, subtitled Progressive Responses to Conservative Arguments. It is from the Prager Publishing House, and we've been talking with Professor David Coates. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Been a pleasure.
All right, mine too. Coming up next, Mark Klein, the whistleblower who led us to learn about the NSA wiretapping program. That's next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hemp, the superfood for you and your family. Hemp has nutritional values that far exceed any known plant. Hemp, used for food, clothing, and shelter since time began. Hemp. This God-given food source is controlled by your government, making it not legal to grow for American people and farmers, but legal to import. Our founding fathers grew hemp because they knew of the benefits it offered. The protein powder, seeds, and oil are available through hempusa.org. Recommended daily intake of this food source will allow the body to heal itself from many ailments. Loaded with potassium, magnesium, calcium, essential fatty acids, amino acids, and nutrients not available in other plants. Hemp can be stored with a long shelf life as a life-sustaining food source for you and your family. Could this be the government's best-kept secret? Call today at 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Learn. Help. Shop at hempusa.org. We do not charge for shipping. That's 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Two arrested in a mass murder in rural Washington, about 20 miles east of Seattle. KIRO reporter Aaron Covey is outside the house where six members of one family were killed.
Two people have been taken into custody, and apparently King County Sheriff's deputies did not have to look far. They were arrested right here on the property.
As we've been out here today, they came to our attention. We interviewed them. And arrests were made.
Sergeant John Urquhart says the victims knew the suspects. The man and woman are described as in their late 20s. They have been arrested on investigational homicide. The victims in this case, three generations of one family, a couple in their 50s, a couple in their 30s, a six-year-old and a three-year-old, all shot dead on Christmas Eve.
San Francisco Zoo remains locked down. It's a crime scene the day after a tiger somehow escaped, killing one visitor, badly mauling two others before being shot and killed by police. The event renewing controversy over the practice of public feeding of the big cats. CBS's John Blackstone.
The tiger that attacked in San Francisco mauled one of its keepers just 1 year ago, ripping flesh from her arm during a public feeding session. The zoo stopped the public feedings for a few months and made changes to the enclosure. It didn't blame the tiger.
The tiger was acting like a normal tiger does.
The public feeding has since resumed. It's a crowd pleaser, but it amounts to inciting the animal, says one zoo critic.
This public feeding spectacle exacerbates the problem and creates an animal that really is hostile to the keeper and to the public.
That's PETA's Dr. Elliot Katz commenting on the tiger feeding frenzy. 'Twas the day to go shopping, CBS News correspondent Michelle Miller.
At malls across the country, the day after Christmas can be as busy as Black Friday. Here at New Jersey's Short Hills Mall, shoppers will redeem $3 million in gift cards today.
We have specific needs, which makes it easier when you battle the crowds like today.
The final week of December now accounts for 16% of all holiday sales, with shoppers expected to spend more than $58 billion before the new year.
Those gift cards proving problematic at Walmart's today, though. Customers unable to redeem them at stores across the country, the company says it is working on a fix. One of the duties of the President of the United States, spending huge sums of money, or at least authorizing it.
It was an airborne bill signing this morning, shortly after boarding Air Force One for the flight to Texas.